Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. All right, Gene, how are we going to talk our way through this one? This is going to be a very interesting day. I'm going to get Gene on the line right away here because it's about time for wait a minute, that's not good. That didn't work out. Where did my posting go? Here, I'm trying to paste and do stuff at the same time. It didn't work. Oh, okay, well, that's not working either. Okay, fine. It's going to be one of those days, is it? I can tell. All right. Anyway, so let me get Gene's name ready just so I'm not completely lost here. This is a little embarrassing. I'm not quite sure how to say it other than just to say it. We all have these little medical procedures we have to do periodically. This is one of those days for me. And so how can I call it? The same thing, you know, Biden had a little while ago. Let me put it this way. The last 24 hours have been really interesting. I haven't had a thing to eat since Sunday. I haven't had a thing to drink since last night. I'm hungry, tired, thirsty. I don't even have my water beside me because I can't drink anything with the show. I got a colonoscopy later today. And so the only reason I'm telling you, normally, you know, the thing about radio is once you start doing radio, your whole life is an open book. Whatever happens, just, you know, when I think I had COVID back before we even knew what COVID was, and I was going through 2 weeks of a horrendous cough. Everybody knew it. You know, I'm asking for guest hosts and things like that. There's nothing private. There's anything private anymore, but there's nothing private in the world. So I'm just trying to get over it and get on with it. But the point is, the only reason I'm really mentioning this is I may have to leave the microphone at any time. You know, I don't think so, but you never know. It's one of those crazy days. So if Gene's laughing hysterically and covering for me, you'll know why. So I think I just get her off the hook and not have her have to explain it. I figure this is my embarrassment. I might as well get the full measure of it and enjoy it myself. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
That was tough.
So don't need to ask you how you're doing this morning.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I've been, you know, when you have the human equivalent of Drano go through your system, you know, it's a very interesting thing. But you know what? Like I said, I'll be a lot happier this afternoon. You know, I've already planned out a gourmet feast for myself, so it's going to be fine. But we should talk about the health impacts because this is one of those things. And I want to spend just a couple minutes on this. There are ads all the time, you know, getting colonoscopy, get checked for cancer. Apparently, it's incredibly common. It's like the second most common cancer, and it's one of the easiest prevented. And so if someone's already had skin cancer, caught it early. Someone who's had open heart surgery, you know, caught that early. I like to catch things early. It really makes your life easier as much as you have to go through these crazy things. Catch things early, you know, prevention. And I had a friend die of colon cancer. And, you know, she was my age, but, you know, we were in band together in school. And, you know, he realizes, like, wait a minute, you're my age. We're young. We got life. We got things to do. And all of a sudden had that cut short for something that's easily preventable. That's the real tragedy. And this is something that was health aware, health professional, you know, more mental health than physical, but even so, still in the health professions. And, you know, sometimes people in the health professions are some of the people that take the worst care of themselves. It's really amazing. But, you know, like I say, with all the ads on all the time, with everything else, this is something that you just, trust me, it's embarrassing. Just get over it. I'm trying to get over it too. It's like my public therapy. But, you know, this is something we all have to deal with. Prevention is better than, you know, waiting. It just is. See?
True. No, that's very true. Yeah. And that goes for anything, though. You see a lump, someone feels a lump in their breast or something that doesn't look right. Just don't. Do about it. Go to the doctor. I had a friend with breast cancer like that. She knew something was wrong, and she was afraid to go because she had a very significant cancer history.
Wow.
And she battled it for many years, and just recently died. But it's very sad. So yeah, because you don't know if you'd went earlier, especially now with the COVID stuff. Even if you try to go earlier, you're not always able to because of when you can get in.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, I could have done this last year. I mean, they gave me so many years, and it's been, you know, several years since the first one. And they said, yeah, come back and get another check in a little bit. I'm like, okay. You know, and so, but last year things were so horrendous in the hospital. So I thought, you know, this is, it's not a big deal. It wasn't a problem. There was nothing cancerous. There was, you know, it was just a check. you know, and they said, and so I came back for the next check. And then I was like, well, you know what, things are a little crazy. I think I'll just wait till, you know, 2021 and come back then. But yeah, I think, you know, the hospitals, they've calmed down a whole lot because this problem is, you know, quite a bit much more manageable than it was before. But even so, you know, I still have that concern. It's like, you know, I think, how busy are they, you know? Is this a good time to get routine medical stuff done? But that's the problem. People aren't getting routine medical stuff done. And people are getting cancer and heart disease and, you know, dying prematurely and doing all kinds of horrible things simply because, you know, they don't get checked. And, you know, it's like everything else in life. If it can happen to someone else, it can happen to you. If it can happen to another nation, it can happen to this country. You know, this, you know, national, well, it's not national, but I guess it's part of the human condition to just to deny until it's too late, until you have absolutely overwhelming evidence, and then you have nothing but regret if you didn't do something, you know, when you could have. And so try and avoid the regret and, you know, get over the denial and just get stuff done. And, you know, you only have so much time anyway, so you might as well make the most of it. You don't want to lessen any of the time you've got. You know, like I say, with me, I've got stuff to do. I've got, you know, I discovered Action Radio, the idea, what, in 2014? And here we are, 2021, 7 years later. And an amazing amount has happened, mostly in the last year. Things have taken off, but it takes a while to get things going. So if you have a project or a dream or something you want to get it going. Don't wait, you know, because, you know, stuff happens. And so you want to make sure that you do things when you can, unless of course, like me, you discover it, you know, in your 50s, what you want to finally do. But that's another story. All right, let's get to Gene. And I'm going to cruise today. This is a great day to have a lot of other people talk. So let's get on with that.
When all is falling apart around you, when people are looking to you for answers you don't have, when you need a calm, reassuring voice to settle your fragile nerves, well, you've come to the right place. The always serene and tranquil, reasoned and measured, stable and sedate Gene Drenig, producer of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature, takes a few minutes each week at this time to reflect on her favorite phrase, "Are you kidding me?" And now, Gene Drenig.
Good morning, Gene.
Hey. But I wanted to make one more comment about what you said before.
I think you're right.
Healthcare workers can make some of the worst patients. One, I think sometimes it could be the same happens to other people, but not to us. You know, and I think sometimes when people think they may have something wrong, we just kind of put our head in the sand and try to ignore it, hoping it'll go away. I understand that. But I think also, too, I've had some of the rudest, nastiest, most demanding people that were healthcare workers, and not demanding in a good way. I mean, it wasn't something reasonable, but they would complain about the stupidest things that was out of other people's control, you know, and it's just like, wow, you know what it is like in healthcare. It's just very interesting, very interesting.
You know, it's funny. I met some fabulous people in healthcare. I've only met a couple that I really wasn't thrilled with, but for the most part, you know, it's a great bunch. And like I say, you know, flirting with the nurses, which I did a lot of as part of my recovery from open heart surgery, it got me out of bed, got me there. And they're always patient with me. They realized exactly what I was doing, why I was doing it. And, you know, and it was fun. And we all got into it. We all had a good time and we all talked. And I got to walk around the hospital much more than, I guess, a lot of other heart patients. You know, the only person I saw walking around was me. Everybody else is on their rooms. You know, it's like, hey, guys, get up. Go, you know, get on with it. This is a good time to walk, you know, and like 10 feet was my first walk. And that was a real accomplishment, but you go from there. But, you know, like I say, it's like anything else. If you're decent to the healthcare workers, they're going to be decent to you because people are still people. You know, you can't treat people rudely. It's like this whole servant mentality. I'm better than them. And you really don't see that. You know, you shouldn't see that in people that, you know, are in the service professions. It's interesting. Some of the best, you know, tippers and nicest people who are for customers are people who are in, you know, food serving, you know, for example, or bartenders, you know, because they know, you know, they've had good customers, bad customers. They see the best and worst of humanity. So when, you know, one server serves another server, you know, they get a fabulous, or, you know, you get a fabulous tip. You still look and go, are you in the biz? Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. So in that respect, food servers understand. And I think that's different. But healthcare workers, I don't know, is it just that you're critical? Is that you think you know so much about your particular specialty? And not mean you specifically, but just, but healthcare workers think because they're in the business and they know exactly how they think it should be done, that anything that deviates from what they do, even though there are many right ways to do things, it still causes them consternation and they just want to say, no, you're not doing it my way, which is really what it comes down to. Do you think that's part of it?
It could be, yeah. And I think it's really, it's so much easier being the worker than a patient. You know, a patient, you're giving up a lot of stuff. I mean, not giving up, but being in the hospital is very stressful as a patient. And when you're going through something, is very stressful. And I think sometimes we're not at our best. And so I think that's part of it, too. But, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what's in your mind this morning?
Well, you know, I got just a lot of weird different things that are going on. I get the January 6th commission. They need to get to the bottom of what really happened. But are they really going to get to the bottom of what really happened, or are they just going to, how would you say, just allow things that best fit their narrative to be presented and shown and all this? And
I think that was to cover up what happened, but that's the
yeah, and I think that's so sad. It's,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm getting really, I don't want to say frustrated with this government, but really disheartened, and I shouldn't, because, you know, I always knew what Biden was. He, since he became president and Kamala is vice president, well, even in name only or whatever you want to say, they haven't disappointed me because their true colors remain the same. But what saddens me is just what it's doing, what it's done to the country. And I just say for myself, it's the voter stuff. There's still voter integrity crap going on. And all this stuff comes out, and now Roethlisberger, what's his name? That's a football player. The guy from Georgia.
Oh, Brad Roethlisberger, Secretary of State?
Yes, and he says that, you know, the two people on that video that were pulling it out from underneath the table in the middle of the night with nobody else there.
Yeah, the ballots, yeah.
Yes, that was just an urban myth.
Okay. Well, no, he's part of the cover-up. See,
you know,
there's two kinds of people. There's deep state, and then there's, you know, folks that are trying to move on. And I wrote something earlier, just a little bit before the show, and put it on a Facebook thing. I said Brandon is the last gap of the old deep state to try and remake a changed world into their world. And so, you know, Trump's the new world. Trump is the future. Trump, and Trump's going to be back in one form or another. But these people are desperately trying to hang on to the world of the status quo, of the, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know, just I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Well, they have this sort of group, I don't know what you call it, club atmosphere where they get their privileges and they get what they want, and they've always done things this way. And everything's changed. This is why the show today is about education and work, and how about how those are not only changing, but they're affecting each other. And so I've been thinking about this a little bit. I've had these articles sitting around for about a week or so, and just kind of compiling and, you know, working on that. But the world is changing, and these people are desperately. And this is why, you know, so many old politicians are causing all the problems. It's old politicians. I think Elon Musk might have something when he says that you should get rid of all the older politicians, because past a certain age, they have no interest in changing or adapting or even looking at what's going on in the world today. I mean, you know, they're using COVID for their own means rather than recognizing it as a virus that can be easily dealt with. And but they're using it for their privilege and for their power. It's a very strange thing what's going on. The January 6th Commission is part of that old world. It's part of the old deep state, the deep state that wants the way things work. They want Brandon. They want to be able to call the shots. They don't want America first. They don't want people challenging their authority. They don't want anything. So January 6th, the whole purpose of that commission is to, you know, turn the clock backwards, to cover up, to, you know, discredit, to arrest, to demonize. You know, it's part of the political prisoners in the D.C. jail, you know, the whole effort to stifle them and not, you know, and keep them from saying anything. And this is why we had that idea yesterday for a concert. You know, I think Josie texted me off air, you know, we're going to call it the Born Free concert or something like that. But things are changing right now. This is like they're desperately – this is just a theory I had. This is what I want to run it by you. But they're desperately trying to hang on to a world that's already passed them by. And this is why they need to go, you know, sit on the front porch and drink lemonade and watch the sunset. You know, take it easy and leave the rest of us to move on.
Well, I pray the squad goes with them.
Well, no, we're stuck with them for a while because they're younger. But that's a different problem. That's a Marxist problem. I'm talking about it's a little bit different. The old guard, deep state, privileged crew. But contrast, I don't know if you remember or watched at the time the Watergate hearings. The Watergate hearings were fascinating. It was Republicans investigating Richard Nixon. Okay, some of the Democrats would never do. They would never investigate their own. At least, well, the new Democrats would. The old ones might have. But they actually, you know, they went through this very carefully. I remember the testimony of Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Dean and all these folks. And it was a real investigation. They actually wanted to know what happened. And Nixon ended up resigning rather than being impeached because back then impeachment actually meant something. It wasn't used very often. Today it's like a poll. You know, where Pelosi says, do you want to impeach Trump? You know, all in favor. No investigation.
Yeah, you don't like
nothing. Yeah, that's not impeachment. That's a joke. Anyway. But those are real hearings. And if you compare, you know, if you go back and watch some of the Watergate, you know, you can still get on YouTube or watch the Frank Church hearings on the CIA and all the things they were doing. I think Operation Mockingbird, where the CIA was planting news people all over the computers to give the government story, much like China does today. You know, today there's no freedom in that. And this is why you see those news clips or see those video clips of all the news people saying exactly the same thing with the same inflection. You know, it's weird. It's like, you know, the brain, you know, chip sends out a message and they repeat it. But that stuff really happened and it's probably still happening to a certain degree. I mean, Facebook was created by a CIA program called LifeLog, you know, and now they changed it to Meta, which nobody uses. We're still going to call it Facebook, so screw you, Zuckerberg. But there was integrity. There was something, hearings meant things, investigations meant things, your word of honor meant something. And to this crowd now, the new Marxists, combining with the old guard deep state, they don't care. They just want their power. Totally different crew.
Right, that makes sense.
So what's going to
do, Gene? I still do have faith. I still have faith.
Okay.
Like, it's just hard for me to comprehend. It's like, wow, just...
Why? Why, though? What's hard to comprehend?
I don't want to say the evilness, but it is. I listened to Jill Biden talk yesterday about, they asked her about, you know, the presidency and stuff. And basically, Biden's doing a good job. It's because of COVID. It's all because of COVID that what he's going through. And he's done such an amazing job with COVID. And that his cognition is, there's nothing wrong with his cognition. It's like, I couldn't even listen to the whole interview. And that's really sad, but I couldn't because by the time I listened to what I did, I was like, I know she's a doctor in education. That's not a medical doctor. Everybody likes to tout that she's a doctor and means a special thing, which really years ago, I always thought doctors in therapy, doctors in education, doctors in psychology, whatever, with a PhD, that meant something. Now the doctors, that means the DOC, the DR, not, but the DR of whatever. No. Mm-hmm. I'm losing so much faith in our educational system because of that. I get it. She's just spreading the lie because she wants to make everybody believe he's still cognizant. But he's either really playing it well.
Yeah.
Or he really, I don't know. Or maybe she's just in the same boat. I don't know. But everybody gave Melania such a bad rap. Just a bad rap. They didn't praise her. They didn't say anything positive to her. I thought her Christmas tree looked beautiful. Anyway, the backdrop of where they were talking at one point yesterday, there were trees, and all my first thought was, good God, I hope that wasn't the White House, because that was like shabby chic. It's like, what is this crap? And I'm not a decorator, but it's like, wow. But anyway, it's insane. Just insane. And now that, you know, when you talk about things, the election, did you hear that in Wisconsin alone? And then nothing ever gets done. We talked about Georgia. God knows what they're still doing in Arizona. You know, it's that Arizona's a joke. They spent all this money on whatever they did for voter integrity. And where did that get us? Not us. Them. Nowhere. Nowhere. Because nobody has what it takes out there to get the ball rolling, to make spin's head, because someone should be accountable for what happened, the wrongdoing. Otherwise, what's going to happen? What, less than what, 9 or 10 months apart? Or away? 11 months? No, I guess it's 11 months. We're going to have another election. What's going to change? Nothing. You know, they said 120,000 plus voters registered in Wisconsin have been registered for over 110 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I somehow don't think there's that many people over 100 and what? That would be 128 years old because I think what, you have to be 18 when you vote or 16. I don't even remember anymore. I think it's
the Guinness Book of World Records would be out there for that many people over that were born in 1918.
You know, and then 157,000 out there, they have the same registration number.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, here's what I think you're realizing.
Who says that's okay?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I think the answer is very simple, but it's hard to accept. The simple answer is people are completely out for power. They have no sense of duty or law or order or integrity. They swear an oath to the Constitution only because, you know, they have to, but it doesn't mean anything to them. They want their power and they want their prestige and they want things as they were. Again, this is the inevitable inertia of the deep state trying desperately to maintain its familiar patterns. They probably always cheated on elections. So to them, it's normal. Their normal is power, prestige, and the little people, you know, be damned. They don't care. And so the January 6th Commission is there to make sure that the old world order, you know, has their power and privilege. You know, you can't have someone like Trump coming along. See, Trump is such a huge phenomenon. They're going to be talking about Trump for 100 years, you know, even if he doesn't come back. But I think he will, because I think he's smart enough this time to realize the mistakes he made. I just hope to God someone talks to him about all the mistakes he made with COVID and stops, you know, touting the vaccines and stops claiming credit for the ventilators that killed, what, 97 to 99% of the people that went on them. You know, so he's been seriously misinformed. But, I accepted the idea a long time ago. And when I studied World War II, I was a kid. And I realized if it could happen to Germany, that their government could turn against their people. It could happen anywhere. And so I've always been a believer because, you know, a lot of things happened to me at an early age. So, you know, I thought things that, you know, I never had that things happen to other people because so much was happening to me. So I realized, well, if it could happen to me, anything can happen to me. If it can happen to me, it can happen to a country. So I learned very early on that all things were possible, you know, including evil as well as good. And so but the evil is out there. The selfishness is out there. The idea that the geldings don't want to change the system. They'd rather have a corrupt system under Brandon than they would an honest system under Trump, simply to keep their power and privilege. Well, how selfish is that? You know, the selfish motivation here is so unbelievably strong. You know, in all these folks, that's what impeachment was about. How dare you question my power and privilege? You know, how dare you mess with the primal forces? Do you remember that scene? There was a movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, Network. And Network was about a news crew. That was the one where Howard Beale, you know, played by Peter Finch, Australian actor. He gets up and says, "I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it any longer." Remember that movie?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a couple of fabulous scenes in that film, very prophetic with what's going on now. So I won't tell you what happened to it because that might spoil the ending for people that want to see it. But there's a scene where Ned Beatty, who unfortunately was only remembered for his scene in Deliverance, which is too bad, but he was a fabulous actor. And he did this character actor. He's, you know, not the superstar romantic lead, but just a really good actor. And he played the head of the TV network talking to Howard Beale. And Howard he was there. And he had Howard Beale at the end of a long table. And he says, "Howard Beale, you have messed with the primal forces." You know, he says, there are no networks. There are no companies. There are no, there is no right or wrong. There is no good or bad. There is no news. There is just, currency, money. You know, there are no nations. It's all, you know, stocks and bonds and trade and financial stuff. And he basically explained the world in the most cynical view possible. That you can think of. And this is the way it is. You can't have an impact. There's nothing you can do. Get over it. You know, and of course, I don't believe that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I'm a firm believer in the Jimmy Stewart philosophy. You know, the only causes worth fighting for are the lost ones. You know, when you think it can't be done, that's where you dive in and go for it. Anyway, But once you realize that anything is possible, that what can happen to other countries, if a country can have a Holocaust, we can't. If another country can have their election stolen, we can't. You know, if someone else can get sick, you know, you can. So prevent it. You know, do what you can. And so you come to a sort of a realism about the whole thing. But then you still, I think the trick is to realize, look at the world realistically, but behave optimistically. If that makes any sense. That's what
yeah,
I try
that
to
makes
do.
Sense. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah. So once you look at the world realistically, you look at Jill Biden. So just look at it completely realistically, stark terms, not good or bad or emotional. What is she doing and why is she doing it? It's pretty simple, really.
Oh, yeah, she wants to be in the White House.
Exactly.
I think she's the driving force.
And she's willing to sacrifice. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm usually a pretty good judge of character, and I don't like the character I see.
No, she's evil and opportunistic. She's like Hillary Clinton, but with a little more charm and a little more humor. But that's about it.
Yeah.
But I think
you talk about Hillary. Sorry.
Well, talk about her. What do you think?
Well, Hillary. I was listening to the little talk show with Brad last night, so I got a lot of information and.
Right.
One thing he said, and I've not been following the Maxwell trial at all, just because when, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't think we're going to get anywhere truthful with that either because of
well,
the people that are involved.
That's a cover-up trial.
But,
yeah.
Right, but they said one of the lawyers, they've had a delay because one of the lawyers is sick,
mm-hmm.
but supposedly the lawyer got a text message before they got sick. And it says something like, It's something like, Merry Christmas, M. Effer Hillary Clinton. Or Hillary.
Right.
Love Hillary, yes.
Love
right
Hillary,
before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so is that true or not?
I never heard that.
Yeah, so it's just... And I'm not saying it was from Hillary. It may, you know, it's like how the powers that be out there, they could easily say it, you know, put anybody's name on there. But the ironic thing is, and I don't think Hillary would be that bold. I mean, she's bold, but not that bold.
Well, she'd never do it herself. She never does the dirty work herself. That's you know, mafia
yeah.
rule number one. You know, if you're in a political mafia family like she is, the Clintons are a political mafia, the Bushes are a political mafia, the Bidens are a political mafia. You know, all these folks, these dynasties, these long-term families that try to maintain power for themselves, you know, they go back to the real old world. And that's old world stuff, you know, and that's how things were done. You know, power is maintained through families and, you know, marriages and alliances. And this is how business was conducted. You know, and you had backsheesh, you know, bribery. You know, bribery is a normal course of affairs. In many countries in the world, bribery is as natural as saying hello. You don't get anything done unless you bribe. And that's just the way it works. You know, so you look at the world in stark realistic terms again. The stark realism of the Hillarys and the Jills is that they want power. And they don't think they can get it on their own, or at least Hillary tried to and failed miserably. Like lots of people failed to get power, but she took it as a personal insult that people didn't recognize how great she was. That's her problem. That's ego. Jill Biden's not that stupid or that arrogant. She's just, you know, she just wants to cling to power on Jill's coattails, who already had power by the time I think she met him. And so, you know, but what she's doing is elder abuse. And what they're all doing is elder abuse. Joe Biden should not be subjected to what he's being subjected to. Do I feel sorry for him? No, because he could always say, no, I'm out of here. I don't want to do this. But he loves the power too much too. But even so, he's being pushed and manipulated. And so, which makes him the perfect patsy to lie and believe the lies, like we talked about earlier. What a pickle, huh?
But yeah. The thing is with that, I heard that they're starting to, what is it, University of Delaware, whoever was housing all those papers, the manuscripts, whatever, from Biden, which I don't understand how they can have that much documented stuff on anybody. But anyway, they're starting to let the public see some of that. So that's going to be interesting to see what goes on with that. for the fact of the person that charged him with sexual assault or whatever, and they kind of, you know, basically, once again, interesting how it depends on who the female is, depends on whether or not they're credible or not.
Of course. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it depends. If you're using false sexual assault allegations to get somebody out of office like Brett Kavanaugh, Donald Trump, Roy Moore down here, Jim Jordan, and even Matt Gaetz, you know, my congressman here. I mean, in fact, when Gaetz was on the show back at WBY, we called it the Democrat obligatory sex scandal. So in other words, any conservative politician who's rising or doing anything that affects Democrats, you know, severely, the first thing they give them is a sex scandal. And we were joking around which one I'm going to get one day when Action Radio takes on the Democrats, which is it's going to be pretty funny. But anyway, I'm not going to speculate that again. I got a pretty wild answer out of Pianki. But that's the thing. It's just it's so common. And so one of the bills I wrote here was the Truth in Election Law. Or Truth and Accusation, which one it is. But anyway, if you bring an accusation within 90 days of an election, you know, you better follow it up with a police report afterwards. You know, you have to follow it through. You can't abandon the claim after Election Day, or it can be ruled a fraud. And that would be, you know, a felony, a jailable offense. In other words, trying to impact an election with a false accusation. You know, so that that's a problem. Because remember, it was like six women accused Trump of some kind of sexual assault that all disappeared, you know, the day after the election. Well, you know, those are fake, but the thing is it impacts people's votes beforehand. So if you're going to impact people's votes beforehand, you're accountable to make sure you follow up with it afterwards. And if it's judged a false report, you got to face the consequences.
Right. Hmm. Exactly. And I think that's where the law needs to do more, too, for the fact that that is not right to – I don't care who you are, but for anybody to charge someone falsely with that and knowingly, I mean, that is just awful. I mean, that is just not right. That because what happens then someone that does have a legitimate case, they may not come forward because they're afraid that people are going to think it's not true or nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But also what you do to that other person. We don't have a right. I don't care how much you dislike the other person. We don't have a right to destroy somebody else.
Oh, listen, divorce courts are full of people trying to destroy themselves. Or trying to destroy the other person.
That is so sad, yeah.
It is sad. Yeah, it's crazy. But we've created a system that allows for that. But my solution to the false accusation is if you falsely accuse somebody, then you will serve the time, you know, of whatever the crime is you're falsely accusing. So if you falsely accuse somebody of rape or sexual assault or something like that, then whatever the statute is, whatever the crime is, you know, that they would have the penalty for the crime that they're being charged with, that's what you get. You know, that would stop a lot of false accusations cold, because why would somebody risk, you know, 10 years in jail just to falsely accuse somebody, even though they may hate that person, they may, you know, but think of the arrogance too, the arrogance of having the power to take somebody's life away from them by falsely accusing them and putting them in jail. What kind of a human waste product would be able to do that to somebody else when you think of it? But yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it happens more than I think we realize. Yeah, I just think it's sad. I think it's just it's just so sad. It's just not right.
You look at divorces, men are routinely accused of child molestation because, you know, it gets better settlements. You know, it's a negotiating tool. You know, I mean, people are routinely accused of racism in the public arena. Why? Because it gets other people power. It's a negotiating tool. You know, so people are using emotions and using, you know, things in horribly cynical ways because it gets some power. You know, Pianki and I, we talk about racist issues all the time here, you know, and then the use of racism to accomplish political ends or for personal gain or things like that. And so, you know, in the stark cynical world, you've got to look at, you know, like I say, recognize how stark and cynical and how dangerous and how crazy the world is. And still be an optimist. I think that's, again, that might be the theme of a show sometime, but that's the trick. That's what you have to do. But you have to realize how bad things are before you can realize how good they can be and walk that line towards how, you know, making things as good as they can be while understanding that certain people, you know, who you're not going to want to deal with are at the other end of the spectrum who are just solely in it for the power. But you have to be able to call them out. This is why I'd like to get a body language specialist when the debates start coming up, so we can kind of read those and, you know, lie detector people. You know, and I got a little bit of law enforcement background, so I know some of the signs when people are lying. I've called out liars all the time, you know, on various speeches and things. Susan Rice was the prime example, you know, when she blinked, you know, profusely when she lied about the video that she said caused the the invasion in Benghazi. I knew she was lying as soon as she started talking. Oh, yeah, it's video. Caused the protest. Spontaneous protest. Yeah, an organized, coordinated mortar attack, you know, where four of our best, you know, folks died. I mean, she was just lying. Anybody who looked at her, who knows anything about when a person lies, you just look at them and go, you're lying. You're just out and out lying. Jen Psaki, perfect example. When she gets that smile, you know she's lying. As soon as she smiles at you, you know she's lying. That's her condescending little arrogant way of telegraphing. Because people, and you can tell me this from human nature, that it's really difficult to lie completely, you know. I mean, most people have a shred of conscience in them somewhere. And so there's usually, they will lie, you know, to keep their jobs or to gain power or you know, be vindictive against their ex or whatever. But there's always something that gives it away. There's always that last little shred of humanity that's a clue, that's a tell. Jen Psaki's tell is that she smiles. You know, when she's lying to you, she's smiling. And when she's feeling arrogant and smug, you know, that's it. What do you think?
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
You want to talk education and work, or have you got other things?
Yeah, no, we can talk education and work. That's fine.
All right, let's take a really quick couple of minutes here, and then be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool. You know, I keep wanting to reach for water, but I can't. This is going to be a very long day for me. You know, I'm gonna have like maybe 3 gallons tomorrow. So this is so weird. But yeah, if you miss what I'm talking about, wait for the podcast. I'm not gonna do it again. All right, you might have to tell people, but I'm not gonna do it. All right. So I've been looking into stories. I'm kind of fascinated by school and work and the attitudes, ideas, and the way things go. Having had lousy jobs and lousy educational situations, and had really good jobs. Of course, the best one I think being my two favorite jobs were teaching flying. And this one, and it's really interesting. Although I burned out on flight instruction, I don't think I'm going to burn out on action radio because it keeps changing. Flight instruction had, despite the fact that it was me and my student in our airplanes, and there really wasn't, you know, direct supervision in terms of that. There was still the FAA. There were still archaic regulations. There were still stupid procedures, and a lot of things that I thought were wrong with the flight training system. When I found all my students making the same mistakes I made in training, and I thought I was just an idiot. And what it turned out was the system actually, you know, encourages some really bad procedures that eventually get worked out. When people get the commercial pilot level, they figure out a lot of the stuff on their own. The best pilots do. And they you know, and then they take the best of the procedures, and then the stupid ones, they just, or the idea that, you know, procedures don't have a meaning. They actually put meaning to the procedures, and that's something that's lacking in flight instruction. That's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction, which is a lousy title that my publisher insisted on, because they wanted something generic that most people would buy. I wanted something really controversial. Flight training sucks, or something like, you know, whatever was a good title, it doesn't matter. But, you know, trying to make controversy out of something that you wouldn't think. But so I've got a, you know, that's my knowledge of education. Is teaching flying. I had some great private school experiences, and I had some wonderful experiences in arts and music. I had some fabulous field trip, you know, experience from schools. My junior high in Massachusetts flew 10 of us out to the Grand Canyon, Yosemite, and Death Valley, for example, from New England. Unbelievable educational opportunity. It wasn't open to all the kids. You know, you had to not be, you know, a disciplinary problem, for example. But so they're really good things, but there's some really bad ones too. I mean, endless hours of drudgery in both school and work. And I think one of the biggest problems we're facing is the waste of talent, the waste of brain power, the waste of creativity, the waste of human potential in both school and work, because it's been they're clamped down, top heavy, you know, bureaucracies of, you know, again, old world, you know, keep the power, keep the teachers unions want the power and the money, and the, you know, government people want the power and the money, and the corporate managers want the power and the money. And they're so concerned about power, they're not concerned with potential. And so I just see just that one of the biggest wastes of all our lives are the times that we waste in school and the times we waste at work. That's what the show came about today. So I got an article for you. Comment so far, Jean, or shall I proceed?
Oh, no, I agree with you.
Okay. Jean doesn't always agree with me, folks. Today I'm on a good
day. You talk about jobs and stuff. I just think about sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm not qualified to do anything else. I might as well do this. And I don't know how people did it for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, went to the same job they couldn't stand, you know. And it's like they just did it because, one, it was a job, and two, it put food on the table they provided for their family.
Well, and also they're supposed to do a job consistently. You know, it's not as much pressure now, but when I was a kid, you know, if you had too many jobs on your resume, of course I had a ton of them because I tried different things because, you know, I could board really easily. This is before I knew I was, you know, ADHD completely, you know, my whole life was. You were rewarded. You got that 50-year gold watch, and then you sit on your porch for a couple months, and, you know, retirement is what kills most people because they're bored. And if your whole life is your work, even though you hate it, when you leave it, you're leaving your life behind. And people don't realize that. That's why a lot of blue-collar workers, you know, especially union workers that work so hard for retirement, you know, the joke is 13 months later, they're gone because they live a year and they realize they're about to start a second year that's going to be exactly the same as the year before, and they're done. They just got to check out. You know, it's really sad, but you got to keep interested. You got to keep fascinated. You got to keep rediscovering things all the time. You know, I feel about, you know, like a 22-year-old. You know, that's how I approach Action Radio as a kid. As a young kid starting out, even though I'm of retirement age, when my peers are retiring, I'm like, retirement, hell, I got too much to do. I'm having too much fun. And, you know, hopefully that'll keep me youthful and sprightly. But back to school. We all know the hours we wasted, the boring teachers, the horrible situations we're in, and here's why. And I found this from FEE, the Federation for Education what's their title again? Federation for Education. Yes, let me see. I'll find them. Where is it? FEE. Oh, they don't tell you what it is. Come on, guys. Anyway, this article is by Carrie McDonald. October 8th, 2017. It's a little bit old. It says, we've entered a new era, the imagination age. So why are we still schooling kids like we did in the 19th century? And that'd be the 1800s for folks that don't understand the stupid nomenclature of calling the 1800s the 19th century. You know, I just call them the 1800s. That way you know what we're talking about. So we're talking about 200-year-old school system. It says schooling was for the industrial era. Unschooling is for the future. Think about that. Schooling was for the industrial era. Unschooling is for the future. Now, I wrote a huge article on education, which I'm going to post once again our new Greg's blog, part of writeyourlaws.com, our new website, our new improved website. But I'll talk about that in a little bit. This article it says our current compulsory schooling model was created at the dawn of the industrial age. As factories replaced farm work and production moved swiftly outside of homes and into the larger marketplace, 19th century American schooling mirrored the factories that most would ultimately join. The bells and buzzers signaling when students could come and go, the tedium of work, the straight lines and emphasis on conformity and compliance, the rows of young people sitting passively at desks while obeying their teachers, the teachers obeying the principal, and so on, all of this was designed for factory style efficiency and order. Which is why there's such a distinction between the private schools that the elites go to, the Phillips Exeter Academy we talked about, and the basically the factory models, which look like prisons to me, of schools. You look at most modern schools, they lock you in. You go from classroom to classroom. You're trained by a buzzer like a seal to get a mackerel, which is demeaning to seals, by the way. You're in this factory top-down model. It's all hierarchical. Creativity is not required. Regurgitation is. You know, and I noticed the same thing in flight instruction. If anybody ever took a lesson with me, if any of my former students want to call in, we were really creative. You know, we actually taught each other how to teach. And I became more of a flight consultant. It's like, how best do you learn? You know, I started doing that with my students. I mean, how best do you learn? And I talk to people about learning. Well, how do you learn? You know, do you like procedures? Do you like things written down? Do you like to discuss things? Do you like to, sit at home and reason it out? Do you want to debate, a lively debate? Do you want to challenge? I mean, how do you learn best? Do you learn quiet environment, loud environment? You know, do you like music in the background? I mean, how do you learn? I mean, the things that no other flight instructor even never would have, occurred to them to ask, things that we were doing in my classes. It was quite fascinating. Anyway, so just think of a school as a factory and actually more like a prison is the way I see them now. So the next heading is the imagination age. Back to the article. The trouble is that we have left the industrial era for the imagination age. But our mass education system remains fully entrenched in factory-style schooling. By many accounts, mass schooling has become even more restrictive than it was a century ago. Well, it's hard to imagine. Consuming more of childhood and adolescence than at any time in our history. The first compulsory schooling statute passed in Massachusetts in 1852. Let me try that again. Massachusetts. I'm having trouble talking because I can't drink water this morning. Again, refer back to the beginning of the show. All right. Anyway, Massachusetts in 1852 required 8 to 14-year-olds to attend school a mere 12 weeks a year, six of which were to be consecutive, which is almost the opposite. Now they've reversed that. You know, they get about, 12 weeks of holiday, and then the rest of the year is supposed to be at school. But you have big breaks at Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, things like that. Anyway, the article says this seems almost laughable compared to the childhood behemoth that mass schooling has now become. Enclosing children in increasingly restrictive schooling environments for most of their formative years and drilling them with a standardized test-driven curriculum. Yeah, remember, what was that thing, CORE? What was that thing called? Economic CORE something. CORE requirements, CORE standards. You know what I'm thinking about. CORE something. Remember that? The CORE?
Yeah, Common CORE.
Common CORE. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yeah, that was horrible. Kids would just, I can tell you stories. Awful.
Well, I've never understood a standardized education because everybody's learning the same thing. Well, it's crazy. You want individual education. You want teachers teaching different things to different kids in different schools in different cities, in different counties and different rural areas all across the country. That way you have the greatest breadth of knowledge possible. And sure, kids will be exposed to some things more than others, and that's how it goes. You can always make up after school for things that you thought you should learn and figure it out that way. But standardized, I've never liked standardized tests. I've never liked fill-in-the-dot tests. I always could either agree or disagree with several of the answers. You know, it never made any sense to me. I went to my chemistry teacher in college and said, look, I'm failing your class because I'm filling in the wrong dots on your stupid test because, I'm not good at simple math, even though I have a calculator. I said, can I take an essay test and explain to you the chemical reactions? You know, I can describe, ionic and covalent bonding, and I can describe balancing equations, until I'm blue in the face, but I can't do it with numbers. I don't speak in numbers. You know what his answer was?
Didn't care.
This was no, you can't, because we do it this way. Such was the beginning of my contempt. Well, not the beginning, but a greatly enhanced step in my contempt for standard education. Back to the article. Drilling in a standardized test-driven curriculum is woefully inadequate for the imagination age. In her book, Now You See It, Kathy Davidson says that 65% of children now entering elementary school will work at jobs in the future that have not yet been invented. Hey, listen, I invented my job.
That makes sense.
Yeah, think about it. 65% of kids, are going to go. So this is why I did the school and work. This is why I'm combining them. We're going to do this tomorrow, too, because there's a lot of interesting stuff. Anyway, she writes, this is Kathy Davidson, in this time of massive change, we're giving our kids the tests and lesson plans designed for their great-grandparents. That's very true. education, you know, is and this is a problem with government education, because government moves slower than molasses. Unions a lot of times will restrict things, and this you know, this is why homeschooling is taking on so much, because it's the only place where kids can actually be free to learn things outside of the standard curriculum, which really fits a very small, narrow margin of the population. You know, the kids that are actually in line with the information at the rate it's taught are very small. I'd say maybe 10% of the kids in class. You know, 40% are smarter, or 45% are smarter, and 45% are slower, you know, than what's being taught. So you've got you know, most kids, you know, either above or below the level at which the information is being presented. And certain kids in the middle, you know, are right where they should be. And that's great for them, but it sucks for everybody else. It really sucks for the kids. Well, actually, it sucks for both of them. I posted an article in the Action Radio Mind Project about kids that are too smart for what's going on in school. They get bored. I was bored. Not that I'm too smart, but I was really bored in school. So that's why I kept doodling and writing interesting papers. And, you know, my papers were full of sarcasm. Gene, can you imagine how sarcastic my papers were in school, given that I was unrestrained? Given the way I talk now? Yeah, this is calm compared to what I used to be. I've mellowed over the years, so to speak. Anyway, article says, while the past belonged to assembly line workers, the future belongs to creative thinkers, experimental doers, and inventive makers. Gee, and that's us. This is great. The past relied on passivity. The future will be built on passion. That's us again. In a recent article on the future of work, author and strategist John Hagel III, ooh, he must have gone to Phillips Exeter Academy, John Hagel III writes about the need to nurture passion to be successful and fulfilled in the jobs to come. He says, one of my key messages to individuals in this changing world is to find your passion and integrate your passion with your work. Hey, does this sound familiar, Gene? Guess what we're doing? We're living the model.
The thing is, that is so far removed. That's this concept so far removed from anything in education, especially elementary education, you know, up to high school. You know, as you get in the higher grades, you can do a little bit more of that because you have a little bit more choices with your classes. But no, it's like it's so sad how in schools they don't want you to be creative. They don't want you to think outside the box. They want you to think like everybody else, answer like everybody else. Just sit there, shut up, don't answer, say, speak, just breathe unless you're called upon.
Yeah, see, I could never do that. That's why I got thrown out of class a lot. And it wasn't because I was bad. It's because I asked questions the teachers couldn't answer, which was my constant challenge. I mean, it was a battle of wits. They knew that, you know, they came to my class, or I came to their classes, I did come to learn, but I also came to do intellectual, you know, warfare, which is really, that was my amusement. That's how I got through school. The sarcasm, you know, because it's the only thing that kept my sanity. So I never thought of school as a place to learn. I mean, I learned some things. I mean, some things are actually kind of cool. Some of the science classes and history classes were pretty cool. The English classes, since I couldn't read because of ADHD, I really was out of a lot of it. So I had to bluff my way through those, which I did very well, by the way. But some of it was fun. But for a lot of it, just listening to the endless tedium, especially intro courses. When I went to college, I never took an intro course. I went straight to the upper level courses because they were more interesting. You know, after my freshman year, first half of the year, I took intro courses. And then by second half, I thought, you know, I'm never taking an intro course again. So I'd start with the 200 or 300 levels. You know, of course, I was behind at first because I didn't have the intro, but I caught up fast enough. And it was much more interesting, you know, to get to those upper levels where the real professors are rather than the intro, you know, level courses with the big lectures and, you know, the course that most people take. You know, but I just did that because it was, you know, and that was my rebellion. So many levels of rebellion, I can't tell you. I think I'm getting them today. But, you know, but you look at it, it actually was very prescient for what's happening today. You know, we are the model that this person is talking about. Action Radio is, you know, none of us are qualified to do this because there is no qualification to do this. It hasn't been invented yet. You know, where would you apply to be a citizen legislator and a radio talk show host and a company CEO? Where would you apply to that? What university could you go to learn that? There isn't one. You know, so this is why this is part where I picked this article, because I see myself here. This is really great. He says, one of the challenges today is that most people are products of the schools and society we've had, which encourage you to go to work to get a paycheck. And if it pays well, that's a good job, versus encouraging you to find your passion and find a way to make a living from it, which, Gene, exactly what you were talking about before. People will sit 30 years in a job they hate simply because that's what they're supposed to do. Everybody hates their job. Well, I can't do a job I hate. Well, temporarily, I've had to. And I've had to have an extra job, you know, for most of my action radio career, which that's going to be ending as I'm getting more sponsors. But sometimes you have to do things you don't like. I'm not saying that. That's unrealistic to think you won't. But the thing is, the question is, what do you do about it? What's unrealistic is not doing something about it. Yeah, go ahead.
And it's a means to an end. Sometimes you do something you really don't want to do for a short period of time, but you do the best you can at it, knowing that it's helping you to get to where you want to be. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, and exactly. I think where the problem is, if you do something that you know you hate, that you're not taking any action to change, that you're complaining about, and then 30 years later, you know, you find yourself old and frustrated, and then you realize that you could have done something else, that's where the waste is. And it's going to hit.
Right, and I think a lot of times people get stuck in that rut for many different reasons. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes they don't know. They really don't know what they'd rather do, so they'd rather stay there because it's something they know. And that's a difficult situation to be in too. When you really don't know what you'd like to do, and then you just got to take time and just, you know, really, really sit down with yourself and just, you know, meditate, do what you can to become clear. But then also there's some people that, they told me, they said, I'd rather do this job, even though it's not really what I want to do, but I can do it 8 hours a day. And I know even therapists that have said that. I can do this for 8 hours a day because then when I get home, I can do what really brings me joy. And, I mean, that's all right, too, if it works for you. Then that's great. But if it doesn't, I think that's really, I think, Greg, that's where a lot of disease comes in, a lot of sickness, a lot of drug and alcohol usage. Because we're trying to cover up, mask our feelings instead of letting them out and really being honest with ourselves.
Yeah, we should do a show sometime, or a series of shows. The three most deadly things, I think, in society that aren't noticed are work, bad relationships and marriages, and retirement. Those are things that kill people, you know, prematurely. If you have a bad marriage or relationship, your whole life is drama and you know, can be just absolutely miserable. Work if you hate your job.
And the thing is, I think,
yeah, go ahead, Jean.
So,
yeah.
I think sometimes people just stay in certain things because that's what other people tell them to do. And
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Do not,
honey.
You can listen
we need
to what
new
other
furniture.
People say.
You know.
Yeah. Listen to what other people say, but ultimately you make this decision that feels best for you. And if you make a decision and you're like, oh gosh, this does not feel right. Mm-hmm. Do something else. Change it. Yeah. And don't stay in something just because someone says you need to stay in it or you need to keep doing it. I mean, when I was in my early 30s, late 20s, I was dating this guy and I had, at that time, I was really wanting to get out of therapy at that time. And it's a lot different than it is now. But he's like, oh, you're too old and set in your ways to change. It's like, I'm sorry, if you are breathing, and you can think for yourself, you are never too old or set in your ways to change. It's like that was just fear for him.
Yeah.
And it's
also projection too. See, now if you change, you'd be a threat to him because he's afraid to change. And I see this all the time too. You know, like you say, there's pressure from you know, your spouse. If honey, you have to go to work, you know, or the guy says, dear, you have to go to work. We need stuff, you know, and whether they're projecting their own things because they want the other person to work at their miserable job because that person's in a miserable job and they want everybody else to be miserable. There's so much shared misery out there. It's really disgusting. But the biggest threat is independent people. You know, if people are in a bad marriage, they want everybody to be in a bad marriage. If people are in a lousy job, they want everybody to be in a lousy job. You know, if people are bored in retirement, they want everybody to be bored in retirement, you know. And the thing is, you can change all of those things. You can change your job. You can change your marriage. You can change your relationship. You can change your retirement. You don't have to retire. I have no plans to retire. None. Are you kidding? This is the most fun I've had on a job ever. This is great. I get to sit here and talk about anything I want to talk about, you know, and build this entirely new genre of radio. No one's ever combined a citizen legislature with a radio show. This is cutting edge new ground. I mean, speaking of which, let me tell you our action item for today. We have a press release that went out yesterday, and I'm you know, really proud of this. This is something that actually Jonathan Mosley inspired. So Jonathan Mosley's our attorney, not our attorney for the show, you know, but he's our legal expert. And he's a criminal defense attorney and also constitutional expert, does a lot of Second Amendment issues. And he is defending two people from the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In, as I like to call it. And so we released this to a bunch of politicians, media personalities, you know, conservative groups, foundations, anybody we thought might be able to help. And these are all people that I know I've had contact with. But it's calling all lawyers with raw courage. And he says, seeking conservative, patriotic, constitutional attorneys to help with the defense of January 6th defendants. By conservative, I mean courageous in action, not just sitting back and reading conservative news sites. And he goes into details what's needed. And here's the qualifications. Must not be afraid. Must love the truth and hate the lies. Must be able to call out BS and demand truth. Must know the difference between loving our country and loving corrupt leaders. Criminal defense trial experience preferred. Having read the U.S. Constitution also preferred. So, you know, anyway, if you could help him.
So did he write that himself? You know,
he did write that, yeah. So
the reason I say that, when I read it, I thought, I was like, geez, that sounded so much like Greg.
No, actually, no. Jonathan wrote. I will not take credit for things I didn't do. You know, I'm not Biden. I don't have to plagiarize. But yeah, that's that. I mean, I could have written this, but no. This is yeah. Right from Jonathan. I just adapted it to a press release, and he's got his contact email, which I'm not going to give out until I talk to him if he wants me to mention it on the air. But as far as press release, yeah. So yeah. So he's got contact me here at the show, greg@writeyourlaws.com, if you're a creative aspiring lawyer. Well, that's how F. Lee Bailey. Remember F. Lee Bailey?
Yeah.
Okay, great criminal defense attorney, made a fortune, flew his own Learjet. Where he got to start was the Sam Shepard trial, which was what the movie The Fugitive and the TV show The Fugitive was based on, the one-armed man.
Right.
There was a doctor, Sam Shepard, who said that his wife was killed by a one-armed man who he wrestled with. I mean, that's true. And of course, everything after that in the movies and the TV show is not. But there was Sam Shepard. He was convicted falsely. He was in jail. And F. Lee Bailey's first big case was proving that he was innocent. He was convicted unjustly by, you know, false evidence and the usual stuff, prosecutorial misconduct, the usual things people do to try and, make their victories as opposed to finding truth. And that's something brought up in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial was the defense attorney. Mark, I've forgotten his name. I said, look, he said, attorneys, you know, if your object is to win, you're not going to find truth. And if your object is truth, then, you know, then winning isn't a priority. It's truth. And that's what the judges, the attorneys have to go for, truth over winning. But prosecutors a lot of times don't do that because their money, the salary, their prestige, their ego is based on winning.
Right.
Which is too bad.
Right. But
if you, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to say one thing, too, about, you know, if you're not happy, get out. You know, leave your job. I would say as far as a relationship goes, before you just say, screw it, it's not worth it, mm-hmm. I think you really need to have a talk with your partner. And the reason I say that is because sometimes you may be both going in the opposite direction and you both are, you know, not opposite, but different directions. And you've gotten the benefits out of the relationship, as sad as that sounds. But other times, it's like you may both be disgruntled with each other and you may just mm-hmm. each have to do things to change things to make your relationship work. And so you don't know. It may not be working out at one time. Even like a job, you may think, wow, I really hate this job or this just doesn't resonate with me. Mm-hmm. But by changing your attitude or even by seeking a promotion or not even seeking a promotion, just in wherever you work, trying to get a different job within that company, that may be all you need, and it may bring a new breath of life to you, and you mm-hmm. may find, help discover your passion. It's just really interesting how so many people, they, you know, where they don't intend to be where they are, but they know that's where they're supposed to be at. I forget the exact quote, but that's one of my favorites, and it's true. Mm-hmm. It's like when, at the end of most people's lives, when you ask, you know, why did they do what they did? There's usually circumstances, just serendipity moments where, you know, things changed. They made a decision and that got to be, you know, helped them discover what they were supposed to be doing or just mm-hmm. gave them that aha moment that, hey, yeah, I'm right where I'm supposed to be because it gives me the freedom to do other things. Because if you look at it, working 40 hours a week, I mean, some of us work longer, more hours, but for most people, if they work 35 to 40 hours a week, you still have a lot of life left, hours left in each day to do other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the funny thing is I don't consider what I do here work. I mean, this is the beauty of Action Radio.
Well, and it's the thing work. Is, though, too, if you find your true calling and you're doing it, mm-hmm. it's not like you're going to work. You know, it is, I mean, you could say you're going to work, but it's just like fun. And not that everything is all lollipops and roses, you know, because things do happen, you know. Sometimes, like with Action Radio, it's always the technology aspect. You know, things are out of our control. But, you know,
but it's still fun.
Regardless
of
what
job
it is or whatever, even if you love what you're doing, you always have these, not always, but every once in a while you have these days where it's like, oh, my God, what just happened today? And, you know, hopefully they're few and far between, but... You know, that's part of life, you know? It's like you know, find the joy in some of the hardships and stuff like that, because not everybody, you know, nobody's life is perfect, even though we like to think, oh, someone else has the perfect life. If you'd be in their shoes, you'd realize their life wasn't perfect either.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't expect it to be. You know, like I say, I've seen too much, and, you know, I have enough to be cynical and optimistic at the same time. It's kind of interesting. I want to get through this article before Shelly.
Greg, that's what I wanted.
Say that again?
The perfect life. I just thought it was out there. But
really?
You have to look at the best life for you. Or it can't be perfect for you as best it can.
Well, maybe the perfect life is imperfect. Did you ever think of that? That imperfect is the perfect life.
No, it's so true. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Work on that one for a while. Let me continue this a little bit here. This is one of the challenges today is that most people are products of the schools and society we've had, which encourage. Okay, I already said that. All right. So he says, the best thing is to, you know, encourage you to find your passion and find a way to make a living at it. And I absolutely agree with that. I've always agreed with that. I've never agreed with this idea that you have to do a job to do a job, that you're a good person if you have a job and a regular paycheck. And I've heard that crap for all my life, you know, from family, friends, relationships. It's always the same thing. Well, I got to find a job, got to get a paycheck, got to be a stable member of society. Oh, really? I've never been a stable member of society. Look how much fun I've had. All right, passion-driven learning, last section of this article. Cultivating passion is nearly impossible with a coercive schooling structure that values conformity over creativity, compliance over exuberance. I think exuberance was my problem. This could help explain why the unschooling, this is a new word for me. I just learned this yesterday. Unschooling or self-directed education movement is taking off. We're gonna do more with this, Gene. We're gonna look into these folks. With more parents migrating from a schooling model of education for their children to a learning one, from schooling to learning, big difference. You think it's the same or not? Okay. With self-directed education, passion is at the center of all learning. Young people follow their interests and pursue their passions, while adults act as facilitators, connecting children and teens to the vast resources of both real and digital communities. In this model, learning is natural, non-coercive, and designed to be directed by the individual herself rather than by someone else. Okay, this is a little too much on the fluffy side for me, and I'll explain why. I have my own article, and my own model for education is a little different. I want to get it posted. I want to see if I can get my webmaster, Greg's blog, up so I can tell you about mine. Mine's more directed in the sense that there are programs and there are measurements. Yeah, my fear with this is that there's no measurement of accomplishment. And you have to have some measure of accomplishment. Otherwise, you don't know how you're doing or what you're doing. You have nothing to strive for. So I don't, and I've looked at the self-directed education. I've looked at it, and it's on my Facebook page. But it just seems to me that there's no sense of achievement. And it's just a little too fluffy, a little too squishy. Let me just finish it. We'll talk more about that. I want to finish the article just so that it's almost done here. Self-directed education and unschooling often take place in homes and throughout communities, but increasingly individuals and organizations are launching self-directed learning centers geared towards homeschoolers with both full and part-time options. You know, I would call those private schools, but anyway. These centers make self-directed education more accessible to more families in more places, and each has a unique philosophy or focus. Some are geared towards teens and value real-world apprenticeships and immersion. I'm absolutely for that. I love my internship. Others are marketplaces maker spaces, that's a new word. Others are maker spaces that emphasize tinkering and technology and so on. In Boston, for instance, the J.P. Green School in the city's Jamaica Plain neighborhood, which is not the, at least when I was there, wasn't the greatest neighborhood, but that's where a lot of times there are laboratories for improvement. Jamaica Plain serves as a part-time self-directed learning space for homeschoolers and unschoolers with a focus on sustainability and nature connection. Okay, so just a little bit here. People educated in coercive models. This is from co-founder Andre Zaleska, who says, people educated in coercive models will be damaged for life. Most of us are. The lack of respect shown to their autonomous selves as children translates into lifelong tendency to, quote, get what they need by any means necessary. We are part of a growing counterculture which finds traditional schooling damaging in ways that are intertwined with the general brokenness of our culture. I tend to agree with that.
You know,
but
I got
a little different solution. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to bring up that of all my years working in the schools, and I've worked with some awesome, just fabulous, fabulous teachers, but I've worked with some that were the most disgruntled people on this earth. And the thing is, they're the ones that are shaping young minds. They're the ones that are encouraging people to do what brings them joy. When you just look at them, they are not in a good place at all. They're just miserable. They're just staying there. Why? Because they got tenure and they know they can retire after 25, 30, whatever years they want to before they want to retire. And
put in
I
their
just
time.
Think that's a very sad situation.
Yeah, sure is. All right, let's get Shelby's on the line here too. So let's talk travel. And I want to hear about solo travel, which is something that I sort of bumbled into by accident because nobody wanted to go with me to Europe. So I said, fine, I'm going to go myself. So I did.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people. As Action Radio cruise and travel reporter, Shelby Fennett takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
Morning, Shelby. Welcome to our education
Good
work
morning.
Chat.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you?
We're having a great time.
Good.
I have a little adventure, which I talked about earlier. Gina, I've almost had to leave the show a couple of times, but so far so good. I'll also explain it. Oh, God. Gina will explain.
Just kidding. One of those days.
It's one of those days.
Yeah.
Well.
Already. It's early.
Well, no, that's not it. I should probably tell once again. I have the colonoscopy check this, after the show, and so you know what you have to do. You know what you have to do beforehand. So at any moment, I may have to take off from this microphone here.
Gotcha.
I've already talked to Gina
about it. I have IBS, so I totally understand.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, we can all talk about our little complications and disgruntlement. Anyway,
irritable bowel syndrome. It's lovely. Anyway,
God, it's just probably where you're so into nutrition. Yeah.
We'll carry you. Just give us a sign.
Well, the sign will be I'm not here.
Yeah.
No, I'll make an announcement.
Gene, we have you. Gene and I have your back.
I know
anyway,
you guys. You're the best, absolutely. But this is one of those little necessary things. You know, I'm a firm believer in prevention, and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. I've already had skin cancer and open heart surgery to repair a valve, so that I'd still be here now. And they work. Prevention works. Absolute firm believer.
Yeah,
in that.
No, it definitely is. It's important. In fact, I wish that they would change the coding, because it's all about insurance and the coding. And they say now that really you're supposed to do it at 45, but apparently insurance doesn't really cover it till 50. Most insurances. So
that's interesting.
I've struggled with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I had one
years
ago, but it's just kind of funny. It's, like I said, I think I was talking about this earlier with Gene, that once you're on the radio, your whole life is an open book. There's nothing you can hide because you got to be there every day, and it's just, I'll be a lot happier tomorrow when I can actually drink the water that's now, I had to put it out of reach. So I wasn't tempted to grab the water because normally I'll go through like a liter or two, in the course of a show, but can't do that today. So let's talk travel. But health topics are especially because we have health people on the show later. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Solo travel. So you wanted me to specifically, that's what we specialize in, is groups of solos. So we do book all travel, travelfund.biz. But we specialize in putting together groups of singles, solos, I like to call them, because singles just evoke some weird fraternity.
Oh, that's different.
This
is different than what I thought. When I thought it was solo travel, I thought it was like me and my backpack just going. I thought you help people literally travel solo. But that's what you're not.
No, so we do anymore. We do groups of singles, solos together, and explain why too. Because I will be honest as always. I hate to offend people. However, I've been in this industry for 15 years, and I've traveled by myself, and I've I've actually met a lot of people that have traveled completely by themselves, mm-hmm. And every essence of the word solo. However, I find it to be another one of these new age, silly, like, I'm so cool, watch me, even though it's not so cool, such as, like digital nomads. Like, okay, whatever. It's just traveling by yourself.
What's that?
And so it's just another catchy phrase for millennials to try to act like they, you know, are actually working on something. But they're really just trying to find a job. And they don't have a place, so they're digital nomads, meaning they have their
So rather than take out another student loan, they go traveling?
And then they post stuff.
Okay. So Shelby, so rather than get another student loan, they just, like, take off and go somewhere and call that education or what?
Something like that, yes.
Okay, all right. Interesting.
So solo travel, like, you know, first of all, it's definitely possible to travel completely by yourself. And I think as long as you have a very good itinerary, you know, even women are safe to travel most of the world by themselves, specifically mm-hmm. cruising, very safe. However, yeah. It's just not as fun. It's like, I just don't understand why people would want to be completely by themselves the whole entire time, whereas we give an option where you can do what you want, when you want, with who you want. But mm-hmm. you don't have to be completely alone. And, I mean, you're not really completely alone no matter what. You know, you're going on tours with other couples, other families. You're going to places to dinner with other couples, other families. So it's nice to have other singles or solos around that you can have dinner with, have a coffee with, grab a taxi cab with. But yet you still have that freedom of not being on, like, a family schedule or a partner schedule or even a friend schedule, you know. So you get your own room and you can do what you want when you want. But at least you have the option to hang out with other people when you want. And so that's the really what we provide, is that meshing of these two really cool things. And then a lot of people make friendships. You know, they mostly make friends with other people that like to travel, naturally. Mm-hmm. However, I think the biggest misconception is that they when someone says they're going on a single sailing or a solo trip, people immediately think that you're going to have sex with all these people. It's just weird. I don't understand.
You're not?
How we have this.
Damn.
I don't think so. Like, I'm not selling that. I don't run that activity. Yeah. But, yeah. You know, it's so strange to me, the negative feedback and the haters. My gosh, like, right now
where's
we're promoting
that come from?
A few.
Where do you think that comes from?
I really have no idea. I'm not interested in finding why people are mean, but I do find it really sad because even, for instance, a couple of our promotions we were just doing, we have two big funnels, sophisticated solos where we do more like river cruises, European stuff, yachts and Croatia coastline, and then and adults only trips. And then we have more of the sexy, sassy singles, we call it, which is way more party crowd and mm-hmm. all ages, but just, you know, and some people fall into both. I fall into both. but that, you know, that sexy, sassy crowd is a bit more, it's just a bigger party. And we have worked with a company that has, like, tops optional at the pool. And I can't believe some of the comments on our commercial ads from people saying rude things about people being single and, you know, doing all kinds of nasty stuff.
Singles
and
a threat.
I'm like, you know,
singles. Gina and I talked about this. Being single is a threat. It's like if you don't have a nice, boring job that with a regular paycheck, it's a threat to people. If you do something entrepreneurial, it's a threat. People are. I still remember this woman I met when I was traveling in Europe. It was in Vienna, I think it was, in a little cafe. And she was from somewhere in the Midwest, I think Kansas. And she was studying architecture in Vienna. And I've told the story before. And when she left to go study architecture, you know, a lot of her friends said, why are you leaving? Aren't we good enough for you? And it's like, that has nothing to do with seeing the world and discovering and being an architect. But it's such a threat to people who wouldn't do it themselves. In other words, if someone says that idea is crazy, it's only crazy for them. It's not crazy for you. I can't tell you how many people told me Action Radio was a crazy idea.
How they feel so it's always I always find being mean, if someone's mean about anything, it's usually stemmed somehow from jealousy, because there's like that jealousy is like the real root of evil, where people get so mean and nasty and you're like, where does that come from? It just jealousy is usually the answer, even though sometimes it's hard to figure out why someone will be jealous.
Covet. Yeah. Ten Commandments,
but,
don't covet. Yeah.
It's really strange. But yeah, we like solo trips. I mean, solo traveling, I'm not into. I don't want to be somewhere by myself and then have to hook up with a bunch of mostly it's families and couples that are traveling. So you really are by yourself, and it's strange. And it becomes kind of awkward. And I'm not awkward at all. I don't know. I'd much rather have a home base rather than be completely by myself. I think that romantic idea of traveling completely by yourself is like, it's a little romanticized.
Let me tell you my adventures. See, I give you a little different point of view because to me, what I found, and I know there are places in the world where this isn't going to happen, but when you travel by yourself, people reach out and actually, you know, become like a protective, you know, force for you. I can't tell you how many small towns, even when I didn't even speak the language, you know, I had these patches all over my jacket. They knew I was American the minute I opened my mouth. You know, it's like, you know, are you on your own? Yeah, just me. Well, come here. Let me introduce you to my cousin and come join us for dinner. And, you know, I remember I went to this pub in Wales, in Mahoncleth, Wales. And I got off the train and I said, where can I stay? Well, go stay with Aunt B, you know, like Opie and Aunt B. So Aunt B had a little bed and breakfast and she says, okay, great. And I said, well, where should I have dinner? Oh, Forrester's Pub. I've already told him you're here. Okay. So I get to Forrester's Pub and it's like dinner waiting practically for me. You know, so people would reach out and actually, you know, because I was on my own, they knew I was on my own. And they were curious, first of all, why anybody would do that. And secondly, they became very protective of me. In ways that I never would have imagined. And so I was never alone.
And where was this and when was this? This is before cell phones are all the rage, right?
Well, it was way before. Well, in fact, I think that's part of it, though. In other words, you know, you have to do things in your time. This is back in 82, and I was in Mahoncleth, Wales. And I got there simply because it was 5 o'clock and I was tired of sitting on the train. At this point, I'd already been in Europe for, you know, 2.5 months. I was nearing the end of my trip. And so I was so comfortable traveling by myself. I literally hopped off on a train on a town I'd never heard of, hadn't looked up in my Let's Go Europe book, which was invaluable. That's basically how I got around Europe. I know they spoke English, although it's hard to understand Welsh accents. And it turned out I was in the ancient capital, the original capital of Wales, in this fabulous old mining town. And it was a really cool place. But everybody, you know, reached out, looked after me. I've had that happen before, too, in Greece when I was by myself. And I didn't speak Greek, even though half my family's Greek. They never taught me. And so here I'm in a Greek restaurant, and this is real Greek. This isn't tourist Greek. This is real Greek restaurant. And I'm looking at it, and I said, how the hell am I going to order here? I can't read the menu. I don't know what this stuff is. So I stood up, and a waiter came over, and I went over to a couple of other tables, and I pointed. I said, I want that, and I want that, you know, in English. He nods his head to me. He says, okay. So then I go back and sit down. Exactly what I pointed at appeared in front of me about 15 minutes later. It was hysterical. And of course, I didn't know the money either, right? So this is back when you have currency. This is before credit cards were able to be changed over so easily. Now you just give a credit card and you're all set. And so I put, you know, three different colors of money on top of this counter because I didn't know what the value of this was, right? And I had no idea how much I'd spent for dinner. So I was you're so vulnerable. It's almost cheating to take advantage of you. There's no challenge in it, right? So he takes them from one pile and gives me a couple of other colors and says, okay, that's it. It's all right, fine. And off I go. Didn't speak a word of the language. I had a fabulous dinner completely on my own in a strange country.
I can definitely speak to that. I don't mean to like be putting holes in your plan of action for other people, but I can tell you two things that are major is that people are not as friendly as they were in the 80s because they're all on their phones. So you can go to an airport and literally not have a conversation with anybody sitting right next to each other. It's the way of the world. There's a lot less there's just a lot less of people caring about who's next to them. So you don't have
that
kind of like free, like in the 80s, it was different. We were more social. We're not. And so you really do find yourself alone a lot when you travel by yourself. You are alone and people aren't that care. They don't really care. Like it's not, you're not going to find that many places are going to go out of your way. I found that in New Zealand in the late 90s. Which is probably still the same, but there's very few places that every place speaks English in almost every touristy town. We joke now that we went to Italy when people spoke Italian. The signs are in English. I mean, it's not the same as it was in the 80s. Things in tourism have changed dramatically and it's become, it's become overwhelming and it's more of like a cattle call than it is an experience. It's very difficult to get outside of that. Usually you have to take a tour and it's always quite a few hours away that it hasn't been tainted yet by just the regular tourism that is today. So yeah, I just don't feel like, I think that you're living in a time frame that is no longer here, and it's not going
well,
to.
Well, I may never do that again. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that when
it's
I
a
went,
romantic
it was
notion.
Perfect. Listen, I was 22, 23. I was a kid. You know, I had all my energy. I was, you know, healthy as hell. I was strong
right.
as hell. I was walking 20 miles a day. I completely destroyed a pair of sneakers. They were brand new when I left. There were threads when I came back. I walked easily 20 miles a day. And I was, you know, in the best shape of my life. And it was a fabulous experience. I did the same thing,
yeah.
thing around the United States by train. And would I do it again? Yeah, I would. But at this point, but now traveling, you know, at 60 something, it's different. I don't want to do the same youth hostel,
right.
little guest house, you know, drug dealers
you know.
In the corner, you know, kind of crazy existence I did in my 20s. Now I'd like to go tour and sort of rediscover like Magna Carta. And I would do historical tours and I'd do research and I'd go to universities and I could do media appearances and I would talk to people and I would basically, you know, show what we do with citizen legislation to people around the world, learn about their governments. We have a chance with Israel. We're working to try and do something with some laws in the Knesset. I have an Australian contact where we're going to set up, she'll be calling the show. We got Skype now. My friend Anthony Williams, who used to live here in Florida, he's in New Zealand now. He called us Wednesday. So our Skype line works. You know, so anybody wants to call in from anywhere in the world, they're welcome. Shub, if you have friends you want to talk to, you know, from anywhere in the world and you want to have them on the show, just tell them. We got a Skype line. It works. It's forwarded directly to the studio. So we're becoming a worldwide show. So my travel now would be mostly show-related. I mean, because I have this discovery that I'm on that I want to see how many other folks, you know, I can kind of drag with me. And let's see what happens. So travel will be different.
Yeah, it's,
but,
so,
but in
so
its time.
It's politically polarizing.
Yeah.
I just, you know, whenever I have invited people, every single one of them has said, well, I didn't really want to talk about politics. And it's just not the...
We don't
it's
have to.
It's not the crowd.
We don't talk about politics.
It's definitely polarizing for them. But traveling solo, I find to be, I just find it to be a silly thing to do if you have groups of singles because you're way better off.
Well, see, now I would do that now. I would travel with a singles group in a heartbeat. I mean, I would have no hesitation whatsoever in doing that because it's nice to have friends. But you still have to have a little bit of alone time. I'd still leave the group, you know, for a few hours at some point just to go walking around and wandering and do the discovery that I love to do on my own anyway. But the idea of single travel, well, is that growing? Because, I mean, the divorce rate is huge now. I mean, there are more singles, I think, now than have ever been. And how's that influence
so
travel?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is definitely the way of the future. People are becoming, the kids these days are really being indoctrinated to be sexually fluid, as they would call it.
I've never heard that term.
Embrace a lot of different unconventional, in our eyes, sexualities. And so that is a huge change
in
our society.
That's so weird. That's not a connection without a connection. In other words, you know, yes, you can have a physical connection, but you're not mental or emotional. I mean, I don't know how you connect with people unless you connect or spiritual. There's like four levels of connection as I see it: mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. And if you don't have all four of those, you can't connect. So to have a sexually fluid experience, as you said, you know, without having the other three, that's not a connection. That's a partial connection. So why that would be a goal. And if you do have the other three, then and you have the physical connection, great. But, you know, it's like starting with dessert and working your way to the appetizer. You're doing it backwards. So I'm not quite sure why that's a priority with people now.
Know why it's a priority now either, but I think it's definitely politically, you know, there's definitely some political clause into that because the whole family – the nuclear family, that whole idea that, you know, strengthened us is being, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not attacked.
Eviscerated?
Yes.
Removed?
Yeah, that's probably the better word. So that
destroyed.
Changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
There's the constant, I mean, it's like so in your face, even on any sitcoms. Like I failed to be able to watch a sitcom with my family that doesn't have some sort of different sexual orientation very highlighted in the sitcom nowadays, as if every single person is just like, okay, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being different orientated. I just don't think it's the 90% of the people are, but like that's what they're displaying. So, you know, you sort of make what you see.
And it's a really sad thing too. And we've come to a point in society, not on this show, because you know we are the ultimate free speech zone, but we've lost the ability to distinguish between normal and different. You know, homosexuality is not normal; it's different. I don't condemn it. I don't, you know, people can do what they want as far as I'm concerned. I when we get into marriage discussion, that's a whole different thing. But as far as pushing an agenda on me, you know, being gay is like a different race. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't register with me. Having an agenda where you have to have a certain amount of gay people per show, or a certain amount of transgender people right. per show, or a certain amount of racial quotas for shows. Now you're social engineering. Now you're pissing me off. Okay, because life is not that way. Most people are heterosexual. You know, there's a lot of, at least, I mean, the nuclear family as a model works. I mean, it's not working as much these days. It certainly didn't work in, you know, in the family I was in, but that was the exception, not the rule. There's a lot of families where it worked out really well. I had a lot of friends and really good families, you know, so, and they're doing, you know, very well in life, which is great. I had a few more challenges. I think you have more challenges if you don't have a, you know, a great start with your family, but the idea that you have to quota everything. And that you can't distinguish yes. between something that's normal and different. You know, there are, you know, transgender,
well,
homosexual
I think everybody wants to
groups.
Be
these
in
are minority
the
groups.
Category. Now nobody wants to be, you know, they all want to be considered the norm. Everybody does. And they've decided that the society as a whole is kind of moving towards that's the way it should be. And the children believe that, too. So that's what will
with
come
with the removal
off.
Of judgment. If you can't classify what is normal, normal I can classify is not what's good. I'm classifying as what most people do. I'm not saying, and this is why I say I don't want to pass judgment on this, but the judgment is being passed on people trying to convince you that everything is normal when it's not. Everything is what everybody does when it's not. Not everybody experiments with same-sex stuff. You know, not everybody experiments with you know, every drug on the planet. Not everybody, you know, the things that are being pushed now that are being pushed as, quote, normal are not normal. And we've lost our ability to determine what normal is. You know, and normal in the sense of what most people do to lead a regular life, as opposed to making a judgment call of what's, you know, you can decide for yourself what's good and bad. Some things are pretty obviously good and bad. But the forcing of the change in your own personal judgment and attitudes, the requirements to believe a certain way, the mind control, the thought control that goes along with having so many transgender, so many minorities, so many, you know, LGBTQ, so many races, so many different things on all these shows. That's an effort to rewrite normal. It's an effort to condition you. It's a thought, you know, conditioning, and I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Well,
Shelby?
Whether or not we like it, it's happening. So this is like the new normal.
Mm-hmm. Accept it.
Is that, you know, people are able to do a lot of things. So that kind of already just sort of makes people mm-hmm. more single because there's more choices, and with more choices becomes kind of a stall of what you want.
Yeah.
And then there's the fact that it's, you know, we have a very immediate satiated society, and there's a lot of options, and there's a lot of, you can get into these connected groups very easily. So if you did want to cheat on your spouse, or you do want to have multiple partners sexually only, or for dating or for cuddling, whatever the case may be, they have these opportunities right at the fingertips of the phone. So it's hard. Like, it's very hard to even compare the two. I mean, having a long-term lasting relationship with someone versus having a lot of little relationships with a lot of different people that give you the different things. It's really, you can only have so many hours in a day to devote to your personal life, most of us. And so I think singledom is going to be the single world is going to be even more plentiful, because there's a lot of change in what the right way is. So there's not a lot of direction, and then there's a lot of stimulation, and there's a lot of distraction. And really, people all have a certain amount of a need for interaction with their significant other. So if you're spreading yourself super thin, you're just not going to be able to give that person the attention it deserves. And when in any relationship, be it, you know, familial or romantic or even friendships, you know, they go through ebbs and flows, and you're going to have some difficult times. And nowadays, you know, it's pretty easy to replace those difficult times with good times with someone else pretty quickly. So I don't see families, and they're not doing much to give us breaks or incentive to be married anymore, taxes and all that. It's not like a big, big incentive where that used to be a thing. there's a place, I think it's Switzerland. It's Switzerland or Sweden. Can't remember which one. Doesn't really matter. But one of them, they have kind of circumvented the system because they reward you for being single and not living together. So they don't get married, but they put walls up in between their apartments. So they get tax breaks that says they you know, live separately. So it's interesting. You know, they're actually trying to basically work around the tax codes and still be together but not be married. But again, you know, eventually you can push that so far.
That's crazy. Yeah, social engineering through married, taxes. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't work. It's like we used to have a marriage penalty here.
Very interesting, right?
Yeah,
I don't agree with
engineering with taxes. It doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah, and I understand, you know, that I don't have much control over a lot of this, but I will say that, you know, single is probably going to be the majority of the way for the future, at least for this generation upcoming. Mm-hmm. I don't think people have had a lot of good experiences, role models. I mean, as far as, you know, when women started to work, that was only back in the 70s, really, when women had careers that they could actually support themselves and really be single. It wasn't that long ago that the whole family system kind of got changed, because then you had two working parents. And that's, again, it's a different dynamic. Like when you had the woman at home and the man working and the woman rearing the children, even though some women didn't want to rear children, it was a little bit easier functionality of a family system. But now we all have to work. We've made the society so that you really have to be a double income to have to really build some wealth. And it's just that, you know, the working, you have both people working, you're living separate lives, you're stressed. It's then that, you know, that makes the relationship harder. And that's one of the big reasons I think that there's so much divorce too, is not that I want women to stop working, but I'm just saying that definitely to me is one of the layerings of these effects of changing kind of what that nuclear family looked like in the 50s, you know.
Yeah.
That works for a lot of people, but not for everybody.
Yeah, see, the difference between the 50s family and the traditional 50s style family today would be that one person, it wouldn't matter who it was, whether the husband or the wife or both of them at different times or however they would do it, could be home more with the kids, especially if they're homeschooling. And they could trade off, you know, you could work, because people can work from home so much more now. So you could easily have one or both parents home, you know, working with the kids, and that would cut down on daycare, and that would be the best thing. But there was a time when one income, I got Josie in line, I'll get to her in just a second. There was a time when one income, and it was usually the guys in those days, and like I say, I think that's wrong. I think that people should decide for themselves who wants to work, who, you know, what's best for the family.
Right.
You know, who's got the,
I think most,
you know, why would you
have
a woman at home? Why would you have a woman entrepreneur, business owner at home just to send a guy out because guys work at some menial job earning less money? That's stupid. You know, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean,
you know,
most of us all agree that we wanted to have the option to work. I just think probably we didn't realize that they were going to make it so was so expensive that, you know, we'd all have to be working so hard
that
we couldn't really focus.
So work means taxes. And so the whole reason, one of the biggest drivers of feminism was the government. This isn't really talked about much, but the government got women to be an extra taxpayer, you know, and then of course the daycare industry loved it because, you know, and how much money is actually made? If you take a second income, you know, if you have a primary income earner, you know, a husband and wife team and kids, and I'm not distinguishing who's working, but if you're one person working, okay, you had that second person working, there's going to be, the taxes are going to be higher. You've got the daycare costs are higher, the commute costs and all the other costs are higher. How much extra money does that second income really make? And I bet you it's not a whole lot. It's probably,
I would agree. Daycare, daycare is absolutely such a scam. Like, I mean, it is insane. They make it just cheap enough to, like, you know, you can round out a couple extra $100 at the end of the day if you're working versus if you're doing, you know, not working. It's just, it really depends on if you want to get out of the workforce. Because don't forget, there's a lot of things that you have to think about later on. You're going to rear your children, but are you going to get employed again after you have your kids? Because when you're out of the workforce these days, it's not as easy to get back in. So
unless
there's a lot of things to consider.
Own,
but
unless you create something for yourself, which is what we talked about in the first hour. Jesse, I'm going to skip your theme this week because I want to get you in the conversation. I don't want to delay it any longer.
Okay.
But welcome in. Welcome here. This is Jesse, our Latino reporter with what's going on. So, Shelby, stick around as long as you can, but just let us know when you have to go, because if you don't say, I'm Shelby, you're fabulous, it ruins my whole week. Anyway, Jesse.
Yeah, well, I have 5 minutes, so, but yes, that sounds great. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, good morning. As an entrepreneur, businesswoman, back in the old days, you couldn't do things like this. But I believe now it's the way women are working is because there's so much divorce in the families. And, you know, for 20 years I did missions in the Ukraine, and women were not allowed to drive in the Ukraine. And if you go back in the Bible times, the women were not as important, only a few women they talk about in the Bible, you know. But back in the old days, when the Bible's talking about Jesus and his brothers and sisters, they do not mention the names of the sisters, only the brothers. So this comes way back. So I guess the women's live movement came about. So women want to act like the men now at the home. So, but we did have a good life in the 70s that I remember. A lot of families were happy. A lot of family had the husbands working and the moms stay at home. And now the kids are so corrupt because mom is not at home taking care of the children. The ones taking care of the children is the radical left in the schools, brainwashing, MTV, the phones. So those are the babysitters for the kids nowadays. So things are going worse and worse and worse in America.
You know, kids have weekends, and this is the thing. As I, you know, I was a divorced dad, but I spent every weekend with my kid until she graduated high school. Well, no, actually, she's older. She got doing more stuff with her friends. But for a long time, we did stuff, you know, weekends, and we took trips, and we did all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, the people forget that people think that if you're a parent, that weekends are for you. It's no, weekends are for times with your kid. And we had great adventures, and those were teaching opportunities, and we talked about everything, and we did all kinds of stuff until I finally said, yeah, go play with your friends. I'm done. You know, but the point is that people miss these opportunities. They think that, you know, weekends are for golf and for sitting around and watching football. It's just not, you know, not when you have kids. And so they miss those opportunities. They miss the time they do have. So you can blame the school so much. And I'm a firm believer in homeschooling, and I would abolish the government education system and give everybody a voucher and let them go decide from there and create. And we're creating new models of education right now. But people still miss those opportunities that they do have.
And you know, Greg, we had a transportation company in Miami picking up children in middle schools and all that. And then we had to take a lot of those kids to after-school programs. So all day being in school, well, most of the day, you go dump them in a place after school. And the parents were picking up the kids around 5 o'clock.
Yeah, because the parents are still working.
About that time, it's dinner time. And then before you know, a few hours later, they're going to bed. So no quality time at all.
Why aren't the schools coordinating their time with work? In other words, most people work. School start at what, 7:30. You know, most people are at work between 8 and 9. They don't coordinate. You know, it'd be nice to coordinate the hours more closely so that you know you can make holidays longer or something like that. But coordinate the days that coincide more with the work hours. But the advantage though is that more and more people because of COVID, but more and more people are working from home. So you can make that flexible.
Well, now it's different. Now it's different with the COVID thing.
Yeah,
now it's different with COVID. But back in the days when I was doing the transportation in Miami, 2004, 2005, 2006, you know, a lot of parents were divorced, you know, and they didn't have nobody at home for the children to come home to, you know. So it broke my heart, including teaching Sunday school here. One weekend I had that child, the next weekend I didn't have it. So he missed out on what we did the week before. And sometimes the kids they were very confused at a young age, fourth graders, you know. It's very sad what's been happening to our world, literally, but mainly here in America.
But I love the after school programs.
Families
they have to
get
a
divorce so they can get on the food stamp program, you know.
That's
very sad.
Okay, well, let's get into the theme here. I do want to play your theme now, and then we'll get into the Latino report.
All right, I'm Shelby. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. I'll see you guys on travelfun.biz. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Shelby.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey.
So what's going on in the world?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening to in Arizona, mayor from Arizona, Yuma.
Mm-hmm.
He declares a state of emergency in his city because within 5 days, thousands of illegal have appeared. They're flooding his city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting out of control in Arizona. And at the border, more and more are arriving in small groups in the caravan. They're not doing 6,000-7,000 at a time anymore. They're doing like 300 at a time, so people do not notice. But it is happening. The Biden administration are still denying that there is a crisis on our border, and there is a crisis. So
well, they're denying because
they're
causing
coming
it.
In.
You know, do you think there are too many
illegals
for even them to fly around the country? Have they got even too much of a good thing for them? That's what it looks like, because I'm seeing reports of people coming in the old-fashioned way, just running the border and just running into the country.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the Border Patrol is overwhelmed because they've been cut back. ICE is overwhelmed. They can't even do their job.
Yeah.
And so the people aren't waiting for the caravans. They're not waiting for the resettlement. They're not waiting for the free trip and the free airliner and the free bus ride and the freebies from the NGOs. They're going right to, you know, whatever family is already here illegally in the first place. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
You know, I call them, what I call them, anchor migrants. You know, something like that. But
True. And you know, the Border Patrol are exhausted. And they're helping with the little kids. So they're babysitting their kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame how we're using our Border Patrol, you know, instead of grabbing these people, say, you're going back, you know, you don't have no papers to walk in. And they have found hundreds and hundreds of IDs in the woods, because in order for you to enter Mexico, you have to have an ID. You cannot enter Mexico. You cannot leave Nicaragua, Costa Rica, or any place in Central or South America unless you have an ID. They all have an ID, correct?
This is the thing that fascinates me. Why Congress has, this is a really excellent point. I'm really glad you brought it up. But it's we've talked about this before. Everybody in Central and South America is documented. Everybody has an ID. Like you say, you can't get into Mexico without one. You can't vote without a national voting ID. Something I think we should think about here. But we've got this bizarre policy that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever, that you can come in if you're undocumented. So if you get rid of your ID, if nobody knows who you are, you're let in. But if people know who you are, then you have to go through the legal process and you get vetted, and that can take, you know, whatever the requisite amount of time is. So the first thing Congress should do is not let anybody in unless they have an ID. This idea of being undocumented should be illegal. And it should have been illegal 50 years ago. You know, I don't understand how any country.
The first thing, they should not allow anyone illegal, because back in the old days, if you had a worker, like in Miami, so many people tried to work in my store without papers, and I will not hire them because we were afraid. And first of all, I will not do something like that, but most businesses were afraid because there was a $10,000 fine if they found out that you hire an illegal. Now it's like, that's the thing to do now. Cheaper wages, you know, you don't have to worry about it. The governments are helping all the hotels. The Catholic charities and other churches are helping a lot of the hotels to bring all the illegals to the United Nations. It's a big thing. A lot of the hotels locally, not far from my store, they have so many illegals. It is out of control. Out of control. Because they all came to buy uniform. They didn't speak English.
Oh, jeez. So here's the problem, though, because people, it's very hard to, you know, to have a huge government program to round people up and get rid of them. People will always act in their own self-interest. And so they're coming here and they'll act for, you know, they'll go where the money is and they'll go where the help is. And the help and the money is obviously to being in the country illegally right now. So the things that we have to do is to change things so that the people find it so miserable here they leave. And this is my idea of the illegal alien asset forfeiture, the illegal alien free zone act, where we do this for Santa Rosa County. Escambia County needs to do it too. You need to create a situation where anybody, any illegal that comes to your county loses all their stuff. You don't have to round them up. They're going to leave anyway. They're not going to come to your county. And you have enough counties doing this across the country, and all the leftist, you know, counties and sanctuary cities and states, they're going to get all these people. And quite frankly, I don't care at this point. But the idea that our own federal government is bringing them in and the state governments and the local governments aren't doing anything about it. We've had this bill since September, all right? Santa Rosa County could have easily passed. All the county commissioners know about it. I talked to one at a meeting. I was at a Republican speaking event last week, and one of the commissioners was right there. And I said, hey, here's the bill. Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. Okay, when are you going to vote on it? Yeah, let's go. You know, let's get some action. They have exactly, and that's the thing. And why don't our politicians care? Why is it comfortable for them to let illegal aliens into our county, into our state? It's too comfortable for them. There's not enough objection.
They must hate our, they hate our country. They hate Americans. They're getting a lot of money in their pockets. A lot of these mayors, a lot of these leaders in our system. They're evil. They're destroying their own country for the future of their own grandchildren. This is what I don't understand. And you know, as a legal Latina that I am, it took me a long time, and you too, to be legal in this country, and I came the legal way.
I had a green card for years when I was a kid.
Not anymore. Not anymore. This mentally ill guy in the White House, well, which is Obama running the show, but this mentally guy, he wants to reward $450,000 to these people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these people are getting food stamps. A lot of them are getting housing. All the Afghanistan people are getting everything they need, all of it, you know, Greg. And
I do, because citizenship has no value. They've traded citizenship. They've made this Faustian bargain. They've traded citizenship, you know, for power. They don't care. Citizens, it's like the things that we used to value. And it's, you know, every time a leftist talks about those aren't our values. And I'm thinking to myself, we don't have any values. You don't value citizenship. You don't value God. You don't value honesty. You don't value truth. You don't value other people's stuff. You know, you don't value anything except your own power and ego. And that's the only things that they value. And so we've lost the value of citizenship. And the people that know citizenship best are folks like you and me that came here legally. And went through the hoops to get here. And the people that know it better than us are the ones that escaped, you know, horrible countries. Well, that'd be actually, that's more, you know, you than me. I didn't escape a horrible country. You know, I came from Canada to Australia to here, but it still was a process. But folks that are tortured or, you know, or lose family members, and then they're killed in these countries and they're escaping, the, you know, the folks that got out of Vietnam or Cambodia before the, you know, the communist police took over and, you know, wiped out. I mean, the people have come to this country with horrendous stories. We got kind of an interesting story. We got the Turkish basketball player who changed his last name to Freedom, you know, who's making fun of all the LeBron James folks that are sucking up to China. No, and this goes with my theory that there's an older guard in this country that wants to, I got to read more about what Elon Musk said, but he was talking about, you know, get rid of all the old politicians because they have this belief in their power and their prestige and their ego and their perks, and they're comfortable with the system that it was. This is why Trump was such a threat to them, because he changed the system. He made it so that it actually benefited us regular people and not them, and they couldn't have that. That's why they felt they had to get rid of him. And so it'll be interesting when Trump comes back and whatever form he comes back. But this old guard that goes with what we're talking about here, the mayors and the city council and the county commissioners that are perfectly happy with illegal aliens, knowing full well it's hurting everybody, including themselves, you know, also they can get some extra money and some extra power. That's very shallow. That's a human depravity. When you think about it, you're so depraved, you're willing to sacrifice your country, sacrifice your citizens, sacrifice everything that you might have held sacred at one point just for the sake of some extra money. I mean, that's really horrible.
That's what the schools are doing. That's the schools, banks, just you know, I have a friend in Miami working at a bank, but he's been working from home, and he refuses the vaccine, and he's been spending money with lawyers and you name it in order for him not to get the vaccine. And it is sad that you're working for people like that. My daughter walked out on a job, and by the time she was about to walk out, they said, oh, we can do an exam for you, because they really needed my daughter, because she was the only bilingual in the office that helped in the office. There was nobody else in Michigan in that office, you know. And my daughter said, no. My daughter goes, no, I'm sorry. I'm out of here. She didn't want to work for people like that, you know. And I heard a lot of the nurses telling me that some of these hospitals, that they said they're not going to do the vaccine anymore. They're thinking that they're going to bring it back in January. That's what I heard so far. So
bring back the mandate in January?
Yeah, they're crazy.
They're crazy.
But Ron DeSantis,
well, there's money.
Ron DeSantis says no. Yeah. And, you know, talking about Ron, I was listening to Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson. He was so good. I was laughing because he keeps calling Fauci COVID God.
Oh, did you get the video? Did you send me that video? I think I discovered it. I posted on Facebook. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think that was cute. He was calling this radical left COVID gods.
Yeah. I listened to it this morning for the first time right before the show, but there's a video, and it was after a video I had.
I think I
sent
it to you. Yeah.
Okay, that could be. Well, I know it was after I had a video I also played on Project Veritas. That's one of my items. The judge has ruled that both Project Veritas and the New York Times are both media organizations, and so that means they have First Amendment rights, and they have protected sources. And so New York Times cannot publish, you know, private privileged information of Project Veritas by sending it out of media when they in fact are. So that's a good ruling. But the video that came right after that, let me pull up my Facebook page here. It's Ron Johnson. The time it was.
Yeah.
But it just came up afterwards, and it was. Hang on, what's going on Facebook? Of course, I'm on the air now.
He was talking about ivermectin, and he was talking about remdesivir, that now they're getting $3,000 bonus, so the price went up a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Facebook does an interesting thing. If you have any posts that they don't like, but they don't want to go to all the trouble of censoring you, they just don't include it in your Facebook feed. So what you have to do is you have to refresh your screen to find it again. So this video, it's Ron Johnson. I want to find out when it's from, though, because that way I can tell people when it is. It's recently, but he talks about the COVID gods, which would be mostly Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher.
I love it.
I just like saying that because it's so true. But what was interesting about what Ron Johnson did was he went back to the history of Bactrin. And Bactrin was a drug that these New York doctors discovered. Oh, here it is. It's YouTube. Facebook. It's YouTube. It was – well, let me just punch it up here. I'll get you the date and the whole bit. Forbes Breaking.
Very good video.
It's half an hour. So it's not overly long. But let me see if I can find out when it's from. If it plays over the air by accident, I'll just –
And he was talking about people don't have a second opinion anymore, you know, because Fauci knows what he's doing. Yeah, right. So they should have like second opinion over there in his place. Other doctors to come forward. Other doctors to say, no, he's wrong. He's lying to the American people and to the world. And he was talking about ivermectin, how good it is, you know.
Here's the video.
He wants to deny the reality of what he said. Greg.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I said the left are waking up a little bit.
Well,
they are, but
they're late. They're late to the party. We've been talking about this stuff for almost 2 years. I'll tell you a couple of things interesting. Well, the video is titled, He Wants to Deny the Reality of What He Said, What He Did. That's Ron Johnson flips Fauci on Senate floor. Rips Fauci on Senate floor. So it's from December 8th. So this is just a few days ago. It's already got over a million views, so this is a good video. He wants to deny the reality of what he said and what he did, and that's Senator Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson. He's a really good guy. He's got our bills too on the reform of the FDA, and also he's got it on our bill to put full vaccine liability on the vaccine manufacturers, and so that's interesting. He hasn't quite followed through on that yet. But we shall see. Okay. What was I going to tell you about that?
I did send it to a lot of people this morning so they can share it.
Yeah. Well, here's a senator, and they're censoring a senator. You know, of course, they kicked Trump off social media.
Yeah.
But the idea that they can censor him, censor Senator Ron Johnson. But what was really interesting, and people need to know this story too. I was punching buttons while I was trying to talk, and I probably shouldn't do that.
It's okay.
But well, thank you. But here's what happened with the AIDS crisis. So back when AIDS was about, it was known, pretty well known, that you got it through sexual contact or IV needles. IV drug use. And Fauci mm-hmm. comes along and says, oh no, it can be casual contact. You can get this anywhere. So he hyped up this huge amount of fear. Why? Because he wanted to sell this drug called AZT, which is not particularly effective.
Yep.
And a lot of people died taking AZT. We all know about AZT. But a group of New York doctors mm-hmm. did independent research because they couldn't get money from Dr. Fascist. And so what they did with their own research and their own money, they came up with a drug called Bactrin. And Bactrin saved a whole bunch of folks that had AIDS. I guess he was calling it PCP, which is some kind of pulmonary cardio, whatever it is. It causes people mm-hmm. with AIDS to suffocate. All right. And so Bactrin stopped that, just like hydroxychloroquine stops COVID. And so
yeah.
But guess who banned it? Dr. Fascist. Why? Because he's in the yep. pocket of Big Pharma. Why? Because Big Pharma wanted to sell AZT. Why? Because it made lots of money. Did it work? Didn't matter. It made lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Fauci back remdesivir, which kills people, you know, causes kidney failure in and liver failure, and causes your lungs to fill with fluid, which then they put you on a ventilator, which is the wrong treatment.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pulmonary edema thing, and I forgot the exact. I got to figure out exactly what the term is. But in other words, your chest fills with fluid.
Yeah.
The thing to do is to stop taking the remdesivir, drain the fluid, you know, and then take the antibiotics or antivirals to stop whatever is causing your chest to fill with fluid. That's the proper treatment. But they try to blow your lungs out with a ventilator, which causes you to both drown and
yeah.
have your lungs explode. You know, so they're killing people with all this kind of stuff.
My friend, he's still at West Florida. He's like, he has 36% of surviving now because they blew up his lung.
Right.
And then, you know, with the oxygen and ventilator and his kidney shut down. One lung missing now. I mean, it is a disaster. Now
well,
a lot of organs are failing. They're
yeah,
going
they're
down
I mean,
very quickly.
This is legalized murder.
Us, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, and this is, you look at any stat from COVID and that goes to the CDC, and you have to think that most of those people that died in the hospital died of malpractice. They died of purposeful, mm-hmm. profit-making murder. When they could have been saved with early treatments. And this is what Johnson's talking about. And eventually this is going to come out and people are going to go, oh my God, we were betrayed. And the thing is that, you know, I've been censored, Ron Johnson censored, you're censored,
me,
you know, I've been shadow banned, restricted, kicked off Facebook, suspended, all this kind of stuff, all for telling the truth. And we know it's the truth. And then
it's
we get
okay.
arrogant,
we,
you know,
we're going to put them all in jail with all these criminals.
Yeah, that's not
they're
as much priority
jail.
As stopping the killing and getting the information out there. So I wrote a bill up. This is back in February of 2020, before I even discovered chloroquine, and wrote a bill up saying that because mm-hmm. I knew the push for vaccines was wrong. I knew back then. I didn't know why it was wrong, but I knew it was wrong. And I said, well, wait a minute. Why mm-hmm. why would you want to have a vaccine for a disease, for a virus that's already here? Why aren't we concentrating on killing the damn virus? If you take a vaccine, what a vaccine does is builds up your immunity, maybe, you know, to prevent you getting something, maybe. Okay, there's a lot of maybes involved in vaccines. All right. But if you kill the virus, there is no maybe. The virus is dead. So if you have a way to kill the virus, wouldn't that be a lot more successful than trying to build up an immunity to it with a chemical maybe? So it never made sense. I wrote a bill requiring Congress to spend half the money on killing the virus, the other half on the vaccine. And this is back in February. So we knew. We've been broadcasting. Action Radio has been broadcasting consistently since February. February of 2020. So we're coming up on 2 years now. There is no pandemic. This is an easily cured virus. You know, the Congress needs to spend money on killing the virus. And especially we broadcast on March 2nd also that everybody was going to get exposed. I found a talk to a group of Republican members of Congress. Everybody gets exposed to COVID.
Yeah.
Everybody's been exposed to COVID multiple times.
Yeah.
Maybe hundreds of times by now. You've come into contact with it in the air or with somebody who had it or with some surface or some, whatever it is, you've been in contact with COVID. Everybody has. And so the only question is, did you get symptoms or did you not? You know, anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I remember one of my doctor friends from Peru and my girlfriend in Miami, they would send videos like, you cannot touch doorknobs. The COVID was after you. It was coming to get you. It was like so stupid. I was like, I couldn't believe this.
Dum,
this smart
dum,
people.
Dum. play a theme from Jaws.
With degrees, pharmaceutical, and her husband a doctor and all that. I'm like, you believe in that crap? I mean, come on. And I wanted to go out. We were out in the sun by Wahoo Stadium, dancing Zumba. We were out there on a picnic. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get out as much as possible. And that's what they didn't want for you to do. They wanted for you to be locked up. They took the lights all off your homes. They did everything instead of helping us. What can you do to help yourself from COVID?
Ask yourself. Let's get to cold hard reality here. And I got Paulette on the line. I'll make her live in a second. Cold hard reality. Why would they do it? Why would they have lockdowns and mask mandates and close the beaches and close the parks and close the schools? It's very simple.
An agenda.
To do
sell
what?
So Gene,
what was it?
Sell the vaccine.
Exactly. But there's another, before that, the motivation is, Josie, I'll give you one more chance. What do you think? Why would they do that? Why would they do all these things?
The number one thing is to have power and control of you more than anything, because that's what communist is. They scare you. And that's the fear that they put in people, and people bought that lie.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one is, for you believe that you're not going to get infected. But the main thing was power and control. And the second one to put fear in your mind that you're going to get the COVID. Oh, you're going to touch doorknobs. You're going to go here. It's ridiculous.
See, my theory is they knew what would keep COVID around. And so the lockdowns and the masks and the closing of the beaches and the forcing you inside are all the things that would make the virus transfer faster, are all the things that would preserve the virus, are all the things that would stress your immune system, taking away your job, taking away your life savings, taking away your business, taking away your mobility, taking away your freedom. Yeah. All this was designed to preserve the COVID virus. You look at any policy the government had, the first thing they had to do was save the virus. You look at all the extra vaccines, all the extra things that are coming out, all the variants, all things like that. All the policies are designed to preserve and save the vaccine so it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
That's what this is really. Yeah. And from that, they're then able to sell, quote, vaccines that aren't vaccines for a virus that would have died out, as I proved before, July 4th of 2020, if it had been left alone. Let's get Paulette on the conversation. Yeah. Paulette, who does, let me get the right title here,
morning,
the
Paulette.
Naughty
good
Food
morning,
Report.
Chica.
Paulette, you got some background noise. Can you come up your windows?
Chica, come up.
That's
she
better.
She sounds like she's driving.
Yeah, I think so. So wind up your windows.
Yes, I am.
Take your mask off.
Hola. Oh, can you not hear me?
No, we can't. I was just being funny.
Oh, okay. So, anyways, I have an answer to your question about.
Oh, please do.
Why do they do that? And actually, Steve Harvey answered that question. It's the same answer to the question, why do married men cheat?
Oh, this sounds
because
sexist already.
She's
starting over the sexist comment already. Okay, go ahead.
Because they can. And that's exactly why the government does what it can in Australia, because they can. And because there are people who will allow them to do that. And that's the same thing. I mean, you know, and that's the same thing, you know, married, and I mean, you know, I don't care if it's sex or whatever. I mean, the truth is, you know, we all know, you know, married men will always cheat because they can. There's always going to be some woman out there who will allow him to do that. So I didn't say all men. I didn't say all married men. Not all
married men. You just
said
married men cheat.
Why do married men? Now, that I didn't say all married men.
Why do married women cheat?
Actually, we're getting off on a different subject, but incidentally, if you want to get off onto that subject, we will get onto that subject. Interestingly enough, women do cheat for different reasons. That is a fact.
Why?
I mean, a man.
Why do women cheat?
We just opened up a whole Pandora's box, and that's fun. I mean, we'll go there. You know, I was going to have fun talking about the government and talking about naughty food, but that's okay.
This is a marriage thing. We'll get to naughty food in a minute.
It sounds like fun. We can go there. So the fact is that men and women, the way they think about sex is very different because a man makes love with his body. A woman makes love with her mind, okay? So for a woman to go and cheat on her husband, like 80-90% of the time, it's because she is not fulfilled in her marriage. There's some void, and she goes outside of the marriage to have that emotional connection that she's not getting at home. Whereas a man, I mean, the majority of men, I mean, and this is just biology, this is just their nature, a man would cheat on a wife, on his wife, just physically. I mean, you know, he just might be attracted to some woman.
So
and
here's,
he has an
so here's the question,
now,
then. Here's the question. Wait, wait, hold on, hold on.
A mature man will
Paulette?
Overcome that.
Paulette? Paulette?
Yes.
Here's the question. How many men with wonderful, you know, healthy sex lives with great attraction, you know, from their wives cheat?
Well, of course. I mean, actually, no, that's not true, though. Actually, the fact is that some men would still. Some men are very happy in their marriage, and they're very happy sexually with their wife, but they still might cheat anyway just because, hey, why not?
Okay,
I mean,
that's not
I
the
mean,
question. That's not the question.
I mean,
the question is, the reason I'm asking this is how many men with wonderful love lives cheat on their wives? I would say very few. I would say that most of the men who are cheating are probably restrained by their wives and their love lives for whatever reason. You know, I mean, how many wives are withholding sex? Just the question.
Well, I mean, again, is it because, well, so the answer is I don't have a fact. I mean, but I would say a lot of men still cheat. Because
Because we're just men and we can't help it? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say they can't help it. I think that an immature man, a mature man can overcome his temptations. Every person is tempted.
I think they call it the word macho man because the macho man not want to have just one woman. They want to have many because they
can't.
Well,
that's exactly right.
There's a way to do that. It's called being single.
Had 1,000 wives.
Yeah, if you want to do that, be single. If you want to be, see, my philosophy is very simple. If you're married, stay married, unless you get divorced. If you're in a relationship, stay in the relationship, unless you want to break up. If you're single, be single. You know, life is very simple. If you put it on the base, just follow the basic rules, and you'll be okay.
When you say basic rules and simple, and you say that, like, where is your criteria for that value coming from? Is it coming from the Bible? Because if it comes from the Bible, if you're single, then you shouldn't be sleeping around either. You should be completely
That's right.
and entirely
It's called
safe
fornicating.
Because you shouldn't have sex outside of marriage. Exactly.
Right. Right. But I'll tell you, sex outside marriage
again,
is a whole lot different than sex within a marriage with somebody else.
For your value.
Okay. So do you equate, let's get technical. Do you equate fornication in biblical terms with adultery?
Are you talking to me? Are you asking me?
Yes. I'm talking to you. This isn't Taxi Driver. Yeah, I'm talking to you. You talking to me?
Well,
yeah, I'm talking to you. Okay, where you at? I'm talking to you.
Only in the sense that I equate it that it's a sin. I'm not, you know, equating it in terms of the damage that it does.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously adultery can create a lot greater problem because it is supposed to be a sanctified relationship, whereas fornication doesn't always mess up that sanctification. But the thing about it is, I mean, again, if you're going back to, like, you know, using the Bible as your criteria, and that's a whole different thing.
I wasn't, by the way.
Then
yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, there are lots of married couples that have very fulfilling marriages, sleeping with many other people, and they that's what they think is okay, again, it depends on what you're going. Well, see, you know, again,
I want to get Pianki in here because Pianki,
okay.
Paula thinks we all cheat because we're guys and we can't help it.
I never said. Wait a second. Hold on.
I'm interpreting.
You're not allowed to put words in my. You're not allowed to put words in my mouth. I will not be on this radio show if you put words in my mouth. I said.
Paul,
no,
I get it.
Not at any time. Not one single time did I ever say all men. Not one single time. So do not put words in my mouth. I want to be very clear that I never once said all men. I said men. Period. That's all I said.
Paulette, you have to understand that I'm going to have a little fun with you sometimes make big statements, and just kind of roll with it. It's okay. I'm not accusing you.
Well,
you're
allowed to make big statements. I don't mind big statements. I don't like big lies, though.
Okay. All right. Anyway, this got started when Paulette said that men cheat in marriage, and then we're just sort of going with it from there. Pianki, your question?
Why do lesbians cheat?
That's a good one.
Paulette, that's a great question. Why do lesbians cheat?
Same answer, because they can.
Okay.
I love it.
Because they can.
Okay. But just to let you know, if you do make if you start off a statement that, you know, men cheat in marriage, you know, especially being a guy, I'm going to immediately react to that. And it's just, I'm a very, I'm a strong men's rights guy, father's rights guy. And I don't like sexism. I just don't. And so even though we're discussing all kinds of fun stuff here, that's what's going to happen. So just, you know, anyway. Pianki, did you have another question? Otherwise, I want to get on to Paulette's next topic here. I think we've handled this one.
I think that one was tall enough that I asked.
Okay, fine. All right. So where should we go next, Paulette?
I guess we've got Christmas coming, and Santa Claus is coming. And just like Fauci, he knows when you are sleeping, and he knows when you are awake.
Does he know who you're sleeping with?
He's definitely been creeping around, and so he knows what you've been eating. So let me tell you something.
So Santa Claus is a dirty old man? He's a creeper? What?
Yes, exactly. So he knows.
That's too funny.
He knows if you've been eating some crackers or.
Oh.
Hey, Paulette. And Fauci is so smart that he tells you when the COVID. It's from the door to your table at a restaurant, and then you can take the mask off. The COVID knows exactly where you at.
Hey, I got a question. It's a lot of topic. I want to throw this in.
Do the women jump Santa Claus when he comes down the chimney?
What was that?
Why do the women jump Santa Claus when he comes down the chimney?
I don't know if I want to hear. I'm afraid to ask. All right, go ahead, Pianki. Why do women jump Santa Claus when it comes down the chimney?
Pianki, you're funny.
Well, what's the answer? Oh, is that your question?
The man can't do his traditional job without them being disturbed or distracted or pulled off the job. He comes there to fill the stockings, and next thing you know, she's all over him.
I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus. It's documented in song. It happens. So why is that?
Right.
Why do women cheat with Santa Claus? Oh, which reminds me of a really
Michael
funny...
Jackson? Really,
what's that?
Isn't that Michael Jackson?
What, did he cheat with Santa Claus?
The
what are you talking
song?
About?
No, didn't he sing that song? I saw mommy kissing Santa
Well, no, Michael Jackson was not the first to sing. That song goes back to like probably the 20s or the 30s. That's an old, sounds like an Irving Berlin kind of song.
Yeah, I have no earthly idea. Let me tell you a story. Really
let me tell you a story about Santa Claus. I got to dress up as Santa Claus one day. I did in my impetuous youth. I did singing telegrams, one of my crazier jobs, right? So one time I had to dress up as Santa Claus.
I thought you did that every day.
What, crazy jobs? Yes, but this is back in my 20s. So
yeah,
I'm dressing as
Santa Claus.
No, I don't do it, not all the time. But anyway, so I had a job where I had to do, and apparently it was for a flight attendant party. And they wanted a Santa Claus at their flight attendant's party. And I'm here to tell I can't tell you exactly because I don't remember exactly, but I'll tell you. I had some really interesting requests from flight attendants sitting on my lap dressed as Santa Claus. I'm here to tell you, women got a thing for Santa Claus. Okay? That's just the way it is. So Pianki's absolutely right. But, so what is it, Paulette? Do you have a thing for Santa Claus? Because these flight attendants were gorgeous. This is great fun. This is like my favorite days on the job. They're all sitting on my lap telling me stories.
Does she sit on Santa Claus' lap or does she sit on Santa Claus' knee? Which one?
Well, let's find out.
I don't know. I hate to get sexist again here, but I'm starting to wonder, all you guys talking about me sitting on Santa Claus's lap, I'm a little concerned here.
What are you concerned about? We're just curious. Just idle
being
curiosity.
Sexist now.
No. I mean, little boys and girls sit on Santa Claus' lap, but I had flight attendants who were mature women sitting on my lap, and I'm here to tell you, they had some interesting requests for Christmas. It was really great.
I can imagine.
Okay.
Let's
move back to food again. Before we totally lose our audience here. And our more mature minds here.
Well, I have to say, I am really proud of myself that I haven't bought any Christmas candy to keep around the house like I did back at Halloween. However, I have definitely put on some Christmas Thanksgiving pounds. Last night I went to go put on a dress and I could barely get it over my head and it was a little bit scary and I was like, what on earth? I'm definitely already planning my January, weight loss plan.
Here's a question, though. Do you think because it's wintertime, do you think it makes a difference? I don't hear about people, people eat a lot on July 4th, but it's summertime. And first of all, you don't eat as much in the summer anyway, and you're much more physically active. Do you think the fact that these holidays fall, at some of the coldest times of the year, that makes a big difference across the country in terms of weight gain? And do more people gain weight in the northern?
Maybe subconsciously we're trying to add some extra padding so that we keep warmer.
Or we're just not as active.
But would that be? But is that the case here in Florida? Because lately it's been pretty hot.
Yeah, we've had it. Summer came back. It was really weird. But I'm wondering in southern and central Florida, is weight gain as much of an issue as it would be in, say, North Dakota? I'm just curious.
Oh, I don't actually know the answer to that, but that is an interesting question.
Okay.
I would be interested to see the studies on that. Because it doesn't seem like my friends that live up in the freezing cold depths of craziness, they seem to be heavier. Seems like we're heavier here in the South.
Okay. So what would you do for Christmas?
I don't know.
Yeah. How would you plan a Christmas dinner that would not automatically? I mean, what would you take out, and would you be taking out too many of the things that everybody wants? I mean, the number one thing, the most useless item on Christmas dinner is stuffing. Why?
Thank
where did
you.
Stuffing come from?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it tastes great. But I mean,
stuffing is a Thanksgiving show, but I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you so much. This month on my show, my Tuesday night Twitch live stream, I have been picking different cultures and kind of talking about the things that they, the meals, the large meals that they cook for Christmas and so forth. And so I did a special Christmas German one 2 weeks ago, and I made a Keto Stollen. And last week, oh, my word.
What's
let
that?
Me tell you something.
Wait,
last
no, no, no.
Week,
no, no. What's the Keto Stollen? I want to hear what that is. What's that?
Oh, you've never had Stollen? Well, Stollen is actually like a Christmas bread. And it's made with, it's a sweet bread covered in confectioner sugar with almonds, nuts, and fruit. It's almost like a fruit cake, but not really. It's a lot less fruit. It's absolutely delicious. So I made one 2 weeks ago. And we also, did some other really good, we did some Jaeger schnitzel. And instead of using the breading like they did, of course, we used almond flour and, those were to die for. And we did a braised red cabbage.
Were they naughty?
And
were they naughty or were they nice?
It was all nice. Everything was nice.
Okay.
And then last week we did these enchiladas that were insane. They were off the chart. Poblano peppers, and we made a cream sauce, but it was a healthy keto version. Low carb with pomegranates on top. Oh my word. That was to die for. And then tonight I am actually going to make baked ziti. I'm doing an Italian. I'm also going to make some, Milanese, steaks stuffed with vegetables, and they're going to be wrapped and seared. And, the baked ziti, instead of using pasta, I'm using cauliflower. So that's my little substitution of naughty to nice tonight. So I'm really, really excited. And next week I have a very special show and special guest coming on my show next Tuesday night. So.
Well, if you want to bring him on the show with you on our show, it might be interesting. You can do that. You're welcome to bring on people as well. I mean, I love talking about food, food and culture and all that kind of stuff. They all kind of blend together. But we still haven't answered the question. Let's get back to Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
Stuffing. Are there any other useless? To me, that's a useless item. Why we, with all the food that's available these days, I mean, where does stuffing come from? Why do we stuff turkeys? Why do we, I think people stuff turkeys at Christmas too. Where did this useless food item come from?
You know, that's a good question. I don't have a great answer of where I came from, but I can tell you that it's usually loaded with bread. And, I mean, bread is like a very complex carb or simple carb. It's not good. I get them mixed up, which one's simple, which one's complex, but it is not a good carb.
So if we wanted to have if we want to have a Christmas, but I mean, I want to explain, folks, not in nice. When we talk about that, we're talking about calories. We're talking about, you know, things that'll put pounds on you that you don't need. So if you could have like a bread-free Christmas, then I'll get to Pianchi. If you took out the stuffing, if you took out the extra bread, if you took out that your schnitzel thing you're talking about, would you still have a great Christmas, or do you really have to have bread as part of Christmas dinner or bread products?
Well, I mean, what is Christmas, for Pete's sake? I mean,
I don't know, I'm asking you.
I mean, you know, haven't you watched The Grinch that stole Christmas? He tried to steal Christmas. He took everything away from them. He took their favorite foods and everything, and took their gifts and took everything. But then they still said, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, Christmas is supposed to be what, about joy? I mean, you know, when you think about really what Christmas is supposed to be about,
whatever, but I'm still curious about, though, whether if you had a bread-free Christmas, would that be a major point that people would suffer? Pianchi, what's your question? Let's just get to that.
They stuff the turkey because they can.
that's the excuse for everything today.
How would Christmas be without? How would the dinner be without the cranberry sauce?
Well, see, you know, cranberries are good for you, though. That's a fruit. Hey, Josie, let's get Josie in the conversation. What do you do for your Christmas?
Or
would you have a breadless one?
They stuff the turkey because they can.
Because they can, exactly. Well, there's space there, right? All space should be filled with stuffing.
Well, when I grew up in Nicaragua, very poor, it was a big deal for us to just cook a small chicken. Because every day was rice and beans and tortilla or plantain. That was it.
Wow.
So meat for us, any type of meat, was so good. So, but now what I do is I do a ham for Christmas. Our tradition is the 24th. We open our gifts at midnight, and then the 25th, we just cook whatever leftovers, you know, whatever we have, we heat it up. But I love Christmas in America. There's so much food. The first year when I came here, I was like, I couldn't believe how much food everywhere. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, that's funny.
Crazy.
This might be time to play my Christmas, now that we're talking Christmas, our little Christmas greetings. I made this last year, how to get through Christmas regardless of what the government tells you.
Listen, I'm going to tell you.
Hold on, Paulette. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats and what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style, abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept, for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is a deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them.
Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. So, Paulette.
Yes?
What do you think of our Christmas greeting?
I think it is interesting.
Well, see, political correctness holds no sway here. So let me ask you one more question. We got Chancey in the line. I want to get her in on this as well. But why is it that we have a new Jewish tradition of going out for Chinese food on Christmas Eve? Do you have any idea where that came from?
I had no idea that was a Jewish tradition.
Well, it is in California, and I've seen Facebook posts. It's like, you know, this is one famous post. It's like, we don't know why the Jewish people like our restaurants at Christmas time, but thank you for patronizing. Chinatown is full of folks at Christmas Eve. It's hysterical. Anyway, go ahead, Bianchi.
Well, I mean, I will. I do know that usually on Christmas. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Bianchi.
It can't be that old, because Chinese food didn't come to America until 1934 and 30s. Well, let me ask you a question. Hey, did Joe Biden pardon the national turkey this year, or did he just forget about it?
Well, considering he's not really president, would it be official? That's, you know, or is that turkey, like, you know, destined to be, you know, dinner? Ooh.
Yeah, just ask the question.
Paulette.
You got me, but I do know this. On Christmas Day, Christmas Day, I usually, we wind up ordering Chinese because it's the only thing that's, like, usually it's kind of gotten to be a tradition in, you know, I mean, and I'm semi-Jewish, you know. I mean, I worship a Jew. And so, you know, and I try to practice some Jewish things. But anyways, but I know that usually, like, if you get hungry, get the munchies, like, because we have a big lunch. That's usually what we do. And then later in the evening, sometimes my friends will stop by, so I'll go pick up some Chinese food. And it's become kind of a tradition around my house to do that, to go get Chinese food on Christmas night.
No, I think it's a lot of people. I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me get your information one more time, and then we'll move to Chancey, and we'll find out what's going on in wine, weed, and wellness.
Absolutely. So, of course, I'm Chef Paulette Martin. I have a online cooking show called Naughty to Nice. It's where I take a recipe that's a little bit naughty, and I convert it and make it nice so that it is healthy and keeps you alive and makes you harder to kill and makes you awesome.
Well, that sounds good.
So.
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
By the way,
this is an interesting chat.
I meant your Yeah, you're very welcome. And I'd love to see anybody if they want to stop by this evening, 7 p.m. Central, www.twitch.com/naughty2nice. You can also check out my other, stations, YouTube channel at www.naughtytonice.com. And I appreciate you having me on the show. And, hey, by the way, I meant to ask you what you guys thought about Elon Musk being the Man of the Year on Time Magazine. But anyways, I know
we'll
you're ready to
time.
Say
and
hi, Chancy. Hi, Chancy.
And one thing you do is helpful to us, too, is anytime you can put that you're on Action Radio and put our site, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, that'll help us out as well. So that would be a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I will.
All right. Chancy's line will be more active if I make her line live than she can talk. Sorry, Chancy. I forgot to click you on there. Pianki, go ahead. See you later, Paulette.
It's so cruel.
Bye-bye.
It's so cruel when you tuck the turkey's wings up underneath the body. It just hurts so much. It hurts.
What are you talking about?
It's crazy.
Gene, what happened to our show today? We started off so serious. We actually had serious topics. We were dealing with all these major issues. And once we get to this part of the show on Tuesday, we get into the food thing, and then we just lose it completely, which is really pretty funny.
It
really went down the toilet, Greg.
Thanks. Oh yeah, and I'm not even gonna tell everybody the significance of that comment later. Thanks, Gene.
that reminds me of the lady that tried to throw the turkey down the toilet because it didn't come out right.
Oh. Okay, folks, we're losing it. We're gonna have a reset. Let me play the gong one more time.
The gong show.
It is today. Welcome back to the last somewhat serious half hour of Action Radio. We'll try to reclaim our. You guys are getting punchy. It's Christmas time. That's what it is. You've already started the eggnog so early. I know what's going on. You can't fool me. Chancy, bail
Get
us out.
Hit that gong again. Bring on the Chinese food.
This is a serious show. We have serious news here. Sometimes.
Hey, I can speak Korean. 안녕하십니까. Hi, how are you? Okay.
Back to the newsroom. Now reporting from Action Radio Central, Chancy Terry with Wine, Weed, and Wellness. Chancy, are you there?
Good to be here. Yes.
Oh, there
Hello.
You go.
I'm
turn your phone up, get closer, or speak up louder or something. Please.
Yes,
they brought
here.
Me duck and noodles.
Oh, my gosh. So Chinese food, yeah, it's full of crap and death, so I guess that's why they want you to eat it at Christmas. But it's, you know, the MSG and the sodium can cause a heart attack by New Year's. So that's probably where we're at with all of that. But
if you like the taste of Chinese food, what do you do then? So this is off topic, obviously, but we've been off topic for the last hour. What can you do to Chinese food? Do you have to make it yourself? Do you have to? Are there restaurants that specialize in natural Chinese food? I mean, what are alternatives here?
Yeah, I haven't found one. So, and I know that's sad, but the meat is the lowest quality. It's fried, and oh my god, yeah. Like I don't. It's a joke when someone asks me to go eat Chinese or Japanese, and there's nothing against that. Like people, you can still eat it and survive. It's just the amount.
Well, there are millions
of
Chinese
that
who do, but. They don't eat Chinese food from American restaurants, so it's different. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, Japanese food, like a sushi restaurant, you get into a really good sushi restaurant. It'd be interesting if we had an elegant Chinese restaurant. We don't, I'm sure there are some of the big cities have. I never really thought about that till now. But, I mean, really good. I mean, well, Chinatown has a few now that I think of it in San Francisco. But Japanese restaurants, a lot of times, sushi is carefully prepared. You know, you've got some pretty natural stuff there. It's a different kind of thing. But if we had Japanese fast food, I imagine that would be, just like Chinese fast food.
Yeah.
Don't talk about sushi.
Don't talk about who?
That
about
green what? Stuff leaves me in tears.
Which stuff?
Oh.
The mustard?
Oh, my God. Wasabi.
Wasabi.
The wasabi. Is that what he's talking about?
No, that's Japanese.
It leaves me in tears.
Well, you don't have so much of it, dude. You're not supposed, you don't take it by the spoonful.
Usually, usually with sushi, it's not even real wasabi. It's horseradish with green food coloring. So you're also getting green food coloring with horse. Yeah. So it's most of the time you're not even eating real wasabi because it's really expensive. And so a Japanese restaurant would not serve, around here they would not serve true wasabi. They make it with horseradish. Yeah. So it's just, all, you know, when you get into all that, it's the same thing. Like most of the time you're going to, you could pick the best quality. That's like, you know, Panera is not healthy, but you go to Panera and you find the best thing. So, because it sounds healthy. So Chinese, like you could get grilled or, you know, not fried and it would be better than other things. But yeah, I mean, I don't see, I've never not ate Chinese and not felt like I was drunk the next morning from like just the toxins. But if your body's clean and you put that in, that's how you tell. Like, the next morning you wake like puffy eyed, and it could be the gluten, it's the MSG, it's all the things, you know, there's no way to know. And the food that they use and the spices that they use. And yeah, so there's that. But I didn't know if y'all were on the food train still, but I'm
here. You can talk about whatever you want. I just, a lot of times the reports kind of carry over in the next one. So I get your comments on whatever we were just talking about, but now you're free to, to bring up whatever you want that you wanted to talk about. That's kind of how I do it.
I love it. Yeah. I was at the beach yesterday, and it was gorgeous, and I got to thinking about how you can live in Florida and be on the beach a week or two before Christmas, and it's amazing. So my thing would be telling people, have they got barefooted lately in this cold weather? I worked on a person I worked on a person the other day from Ecuador, and she just moved back here, and as I got to her feet, I noticed that she had been barefooted a lot because – you can kind of tell the toes will be spaced out and they'll be firm and they'll have good feel to them. And I was telling her, I was like, now you're back here, do you plan to be barefooted a lot? And she was like, you know, I haven't even thought about that. She was like, because the beach won't be like close to my house, so I might be back in shoes a lot. And I said, well, you need to, you know, pay attention to that, because all of our organs and the reflexology part of our feet, they love to have the earth underneath them, which is what they were created to do. So, and as it gets cold, we don't do that. But yesterday I was barefooted in the sand and I was like, you know, this is like, I hardly ever do this anymore because I'm inside, I massage, I'm barefooted in my massage room, but then I put on shoes. And so I went barefooted the rest of the day, like got in and out of the car barefooted. I know that was weird, but I was only going a few places. But my, I was thinking of that as like, we
driving
need
barefoot.
To be barefooted more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can drive barefoot. You just can't drive with sandals or flip-flops because they get caught in the accelerator and you have real problems sometimes. That's, you know.
And that's all I wear is flip-flops or barefoot. But, yeah. So, and I have some good flip-flops that I like. But that was what I wanted to talk about today, is if, you know, just little things that you can do between now and Christmas or even after Christmas to get better.
No, I want to talk about this
happier.
For a second. This is interesting there because I never liked going barefoot as a kid. I mean, you know, I hated stubbing my toes. I hated walking on pebbles. I just couldn't stand it. So I've always worn shoes, except at the beach or grass fields or open places like that where I knew it was safe to walk. And then I mean, no problem. It's kind of fun, especially at the beach. I've got many, many beach hours in San Francisco where it's fairly cold, you know, most of the year at San Francisco Beach. We're still all barefoot, you know, and our toes are freezing and get numb in the water, and it's great. But there is some scientific things to being barefoot. And the reason I'm asking is I remember when I was on a cruise ending up in Panama and this Imbara village, and the folks there were going barefoot all the time. It was sort of like, you know, pseudo native, but not really, because they all had cell phones and grass skirts. It was really an interesting compromise. But the thing is, the folks were barefoot, but the soles of their feet were like, you know, quarter inch thick. And they built up a lifetime of where it's very easy to go barefoot. I mean, they had a real pad, like the sole of a shoe practically on the bottom of their feet. And we don't do that anymore. So what's, you know, what is the therapeutic advantage to being barefoot? I mean, there is that. I feel that connection. Like I say, I mean, tree hugging is real. If you hug a tree, you're going to get energy. I don't care what people say. It's real. I've done it. But the thing is, barefoot is something that I just don't like just from a safety aspect, and it's not comfortable. But I know there's some really good medical reasons for doing it. So are you safer, healthier barefoot all the time, as much as possible on certain surfaces, better with grass and beach and not pavement, because pavement gets really hot? You know, and what are the benefits of this and what are the downsides?
Right. So you want to be on the actual ground. So something that's either grassy or dirt or sand, something that is not sealed concrete. Some of the concrete is open. You know, you can tell it's like a rough feel. So that's a little bit okay, as in getting the benefits of it. So, and then the concept of the pain is the more you do it, the less it hurts. And so like I will walk up and down my gravel driveway on purpose so that, you know, it's number one, it's reflexology. So you're getting mm-hmm. those points on your face. And you can do it slow, you know, and you can take your time and you can tell yourself why you're doing it. But being mm-hmm. grounded with the frequency of the earth is where we're missing out, because the frequency of the earth is changing so much because of 5G, because of the internet, because of being in a big city and there's so many wires and there's so many electronic devices going on. So if you can get your bare feet on the bare ground that God made and that the frequency is there, it kind of resets yours. So it's not instant, but it gives you that connection to Mother Earth, and you're able to, just like tree hugging, it's the same, you know, pretty much the same concept. They're rooted in the ground and they're pulling up that energy from the earth. And so you can do it on a towel, preferably a cotton towel, but you don't have to stand directly on the ground. Like if it's freezing, there can be like a thin layer between you and the ground, but barefoot is the best, just 10 minutes a day. And I try to do it when I get home, or if I'm not going into work, I do it before I go to work.
Yeah, home is easy. You know, hardwood floors, rugs, tile floors, things like that. It makes it much easier at home, but outside, I just am not comfortable. Yeah. Pianki, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing about barefooting is that you take in minerals through your feet. You know, I spent a lot of time in Africa, and you get used to it. But, you know, in Senegal, there's the Pink Lake. The Pink Lake is salt, and people come from all over the world just to get in that lake and just, you know, soak. It's, and it's pink at that, too, by the way, the water.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing is, like, these are quick. So the ocean would be your number one goal because we're the closest to it. But so everybody can ground at their house. Everybody can get barefooted, and it may look stupid, but standing in your yard, in like even if you got to clear the path and get the sticks out of the way, just stand there and breathe or stand there and answer an email, and you're doing something. And the blood vessel part is where I was really happy because of all the stuff going on with COVID and people's hearts. So the it can include the blood vessels, the defects of the heart, coronary heart disease. Like, it opens up your blood vessels and lets them kind of be happy for a second. So that's where, if you do it for anything, do it for your heart and do it for your happiness. So.
Yeah, but how is it?
There's
I've
a song
that
called
you,
Barefooting. You ever heard of it? Barefooting. We barefooting.
Pianki wants to sing.
No, but that's good. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But here's the thing. If you walk on concrete or asphalt or some things, they can't be good for your feet. I've heard that actually can be, you know, damaging to your feet over time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. No concrete, no asphalt when it's hot. I mean, you'll eventually get to where you could, you know, but don't just go stand in the middle of an asphalt street and burn your feet off. But the ground, the grass, the dirt, the things that are natural is what grounding is, earthing is. And then it carries over into other parts of your life to where you might could walk on a concrete pad for 2 seconds to get to your car instead of putting on your socks and putting on your shoes when you got to run to the car. Like, you'll eventually realize, oh, I can still get that. Like, no big deal, you know. And then you've got, you're strengthening your feet, which are what support you. And so I have some people's feet don't even move. Like, their toes don't bend. And it's because they've been in work shoes all of their life. And then you get someone who you can tell they've been in flip-flops or they've been in whatever, and their toes move, so that means they're quicker on their feet. If they go to grab something, they may not fall as fast as someone else who's been wearing shoes all their life. So it's really beneficial in more ways than we want to think. And society, like most things, has made it look like you're homeless if you're barefooted. So if you walk around barefooted, they're like, oh,
you know,
God,
you,
bless your heart.
Yeah. You know, you can take a shower in the rain.
Yes, and I did that the other day.
Stand outside in your yard and take a shower.
Yeah, anything connected to, so I went, the other day, I was like, if it's raining when I get home, I'm going to just get out in the rain, and it was wonderful, you know, because we don't do that either. We run from the rain. We're like, oh, we got to get in our car real quick, or, you
and
know, we don't do anything in the rain.
People are running from the rain and then take a shower. It cracks me up, yeah.
Yes,
but rainwater,
exactly.
Actually,
I used to have a little hole in the backyard, fill it up with water, and I used to toss my daughter over in it so she could get muddy.
Yes,
sorry.
That's awesome.
The microphone. Yeah. You know, we used to, my family in Australia used to collect rainwater, this huge tank, and use it for laundry, use it for showers and things. And it's just, but in some places in the country, I think it's actually illegal to collect rainwater. And I forgot what the reason was. There's some environmental, because the water companies obviously don't want you, you know, they want to sell you water. And so, but the rainwater is fabulous for all kinds of things. See, if you can wash clothes in it, especially wash your hair in it, you know, all kinds of, just shower, you know, get out in the rain. But it's just funny that the people do anything to avoid getting wet and then you know, leap into a shower. So it's almost like water is conditional. You know, they won't get in the ocean, but they'll take a salt bath in a spa, you know, so they won't, you know, they won't get a freshwater glacial lake, which is some of the clearest. I used to go swimming and actually learn how to water ski up in Maine. And watching me water ski is one of the great comic events of the world, trust me. But I was able to do it. And this beautiful, clear, crystal glacier-formed lake, the water, you could see down 20 feet, clear as, you know, just like looking without water. Yeah. I mean, it's that clear. Yeah. And that was some of the purest water out there, and it was great fun. You know, but people would, well, it's you know, it's a lake, there's fish in there. Well, yeah, so, you know, well, not around my water skiing. They're smarter than that, yeah.
Yes.
We had an area in Africa over there in Dutch Kamenda there in Ghana, and it's on the beach. And when the waves come in, they light up like the white water lights up like a neon light.
Ooh, what's in it? Mm-hmm. It's like an algae or what's in it? What's in it doing that?
I don't know, but it does. It lights up. You can see it for, you know, way off.
Wow.
Actually, getting in the water like that, is especially in rivers, good for your immune system.
That's where we're at. That's what we're talking. So that's
why
just the immune system.
Why does the river water improve your immune system? I'm just curious.
Because you're exposing yourself to a whole lot of things that you normally would, and they come from a long ways, you know, especially downstream.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, how fresh is fresh water? That's the thing too. It's like, you know, I've heard, especially when walking barefoot, if you can take in minerals, can't you take in, you know, other parasites or things or that can get into your feet as well? So that's another thing I've been crazy about. Or you know, excrement of various animals is not good to walk in. A lot of kids can get sick from that in bare feet. So there's a good side and a bad side to it. So how do you get the natural benefits? I think a beach is probably one of the places to walk barefoot.
You know, in some villages, the kids drink from a trough that the cows drink from.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And they never get sick.
No, because they're used to it. But where I'm at is, like, you have a space. So there's got to be some piece of grass that doesn't have feces in it and doesn't have, you know, like, runoff from, I mean, again, because pesticides are a problem. So, but where I've gotten is it's 80-20. So instead of not doing it at all, because of the effects of not doing it at all are worse than just doing it and then wiping your feet off if you have to with, you know, some kind of soap and water that's not
antibacterial. Foot sanitizer.
Nope.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to, you know, take the benefits away. But just, you know, like, it's one of them that we're scared of germs and we shouldn't be. And, you know, our bodies are amazing, and the more we take away from them, the more, you get in the ocean and you get a bacterial infection. Like, I don't know how many of my friends have told me about their young kids getting bacterial infections from the ocean. And my only answer to it is that they're getting sicker and sicker. You know, they're getting more vaccines, they're eating crappier, and then they get in the ocean and there is bacteria in there. I mean, that's what makes the world go round. But, so we've got to find a balance of getting that good and bad. And I'm a product of that. I washed my hands so much in high school that I washed the skin off of them. I was a type A OCD. Yeah, I wouldn't touch a doorknob without washing my hands. Yes.
Yeah.
I was washing the good germs off is what the doctor said. So, but then once you're educated and once you know that you're going to be okay, you go forward and I touch people, you know, skin and epithelial scales, and you know, there's all kinds of things that I would never have thought I would be doing. But once you're educated, which is what we are lacking, no one wants to educate themselves on what's going on.
Also,
they just want to...
but the special interests like COVID. COVID is a marketing campaign for big government pharma. You know, the NIH owns patents. You know, the pharmaceuticals own patents. Universities get tax money. You know, there's so much money in this and so much misinformation. They're telling you all the things that are wrong. In fact, you can probably, you know, I'd be curious your opinion on this. That's my contention, that the government pharma industrial complex, in order to sell as many vaccines for as many years as possible, purposely did everything possible to make sure COVID didn't go away. They told people to do all the things that would have preserved it. Lockdowns, preserve it. Staying at home, preserves it. You know, stressing people out, ruining their immune system, preserves the virus. You know, vaccines, which cause the variants, preserves the virus. Everything they're doing is counter to what should be done, which is vitamin D, vitamin C, fresh air, exercise, the beach, sunshine, running around, living your life, being happy, doing your job, making money, you know, having a good time and leading normal lives. It's like everything they did was to preserve this virus as long as possible. That's what it looks like to me. What do you think?
Right. And then, because they want you to be, they want you to feel like you're the selfish one for continuing your life. And that's where we'll look at. Us who are going about our business and like doing our things and not wearing a mask around the elderly, we're the ones killing everybody. And they want us to feel that way. They want that fear. They want that guilt. And because that is trauma and that stores in the body. And you have to constantly fight that. And again, grounding is a way to do that because it gets you where you're at. It's like, am I okay? Am I doing what I'm doing because I want to do it or someone else has told me to do it? Because
so
that is the main question.
What is grounding? We should probably get a really good definition for that because it's one of those terms that everybody uses. No one wants to ask what it is because everybody uses it. You're assumed that you should know. What's grounding?
Yes. Grounding is getting in touch with the ground with bare skin. So if
literally,
you don't want to put your bare skin.
Literally grounding.
Literally. That's grounding, yes, because you're literally on the ground. You're not – there's nothing between you and the ground. I mean, I can Google the definition
but
of
that's
it.
That's no fun. That's why I have guests. I don't have to Google everything.
Grounding is – let's see what it tells me that I don't know. It's a therapeutic
you
technique
remember.
That involves doing activities that ground or electrically reconnect you to the earth. So it relies on earthing science. And all the things. And the EMF, that's the big, that's where, you know, EMFs are disease in the body. And we're always going to be surrounded by them. So there will be, you know, no mitigation
EMF,
of that. They will only
electromagnetic fields?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And that is, so I also read, that was what I wanted to end with, is there was like a little snippet from something that I read about the vaccine. And we all, you know, some of us have looked up the ingredients, but it's got the PEG, polyethylene glycol in it. And they're saying it will do one of two things. It will protect you from the frequency that's going to be eventually emitted from 5G, or it's going to supercharge the graphene oxide, which is in the shot too. And so it's like EMF is – everybody's been, oh, well, 5G's coming, everything's rolling out, and we're just going to have to get used to it. And so we I don't know this answer. I just thought that was interesting of like – so either the people with the shot are going to be the ones that survive, you know, everything and like not get sick when the 5G is in your neighborhood on a tower that looks like a tree, or they're going to get sicker. And so that's where we're at. And
well,
that's why if you protect yourself from EMF, you're better off.
Yeah, the grounding kind of realigns the electrons in your cell. You remember in Hercules, the Hercules, there was a movie on about Hercules, and he came across the goddess Thetis. And they got to fighting. And every time Hercules hit him and knocked him out, he fall on the ground, Hercules went to walk away and Thetis be laughing. Ha, 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 ha. So Ulysses told Hercules exactly who he was. So the next time he just picked him over his head and threw him over into the water, and that solved the problem. So, yes, grounding is a real thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's been around, and it's just like anything else that's good. It sounds too good to be true, so they don't want us to do it. And because once we figure it out that it's free and or easily accessible, we win. And we have power that they don't want us to have. And so that's why I like to let people know little bitty things. I kept the sand, like when I got off the beach, I kept the sand on my feet and brought it into my car. Like, those little bitty things that now next time if I want to be barefoot in my car, I've got some crystal quartz underneath my feet. Like, we're too worried about being dirty. You don't have to be filthy and walk around like not bathing, but that's a whole nother subject, as we bathe too much. But the process of just being healthy is simple, and we're complicating it, and we're telling people that they can't. You have to do X, Y, Z, or you will not be healthy. Whereas if we just give them the power to do a little bit, I can stand outside barefooted for 10 minutes, and I'm bet, yeah, you can. Go play with your kid or your dog or your husband or your wife and just stand there and laugh about the fact that you're standing there, because laughter is medicine. So it just spills over into each other.
Did you ever see the movie Barefoot in the Park? There's a movie, Robert Redford and Barbara Streisand, Barefoot in the Park, and she used to walk around barefoot in the park, and she taught, you know, Robert Redford, the uptight business guy, to walk around barefoot in the park. And there was another movie with Richard Gere where he ends up, he's a big, powerful business type, and he ends up walking around barefoot in the park, too. So it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes a lot of sense.
And yeah. It works. Bianchi?
Let's do it.
Yeah, the sand and even dirt would help remove the dead skin off your body also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you put your feet in some waters, those little minerals will come eat the dead skin off your feet. There's a lot of things in nature we don't do.
Those pedicure tanks where they got those little fishies in them.
Yeah.
That cracks me up. Well, here's Chancy, what we need to talk about in coming weeks is this kind of convergence, and it's going to take a while to explain this, of 5G technology, electromagnetic, you know, radio phone technology, and our personal electronic field that we have within us, and the COVID vaccine, because we've done, you can look back, find a show I did on graphene oxide, and the fact that there's ferrous particles. Ferrous is iron. Iron is magnetic. So when people are doing those experiments of putting magnets on their arm and they stayed there, that's why. So on the vaccine site, you have graphene oxide. I'm not sure what the graphene and the oxide is exactly, because this is the first time I heard that chemical, even though I had a bunch of research at the time. I could look it up again. But the iron particles are real.
Yeah.
And so I'm not buying into the biochip, you know, that's going to go to your brain and regulate everything. But I do think there's some kind of connection, because the radio fields are bad. That's why I don't ever put a cell phone up to my head. Never. I'm always using the speaker.
Yeah.
I used to use the earbuds when we had those, but those have other problems with compression. But there are simple things. And what we want to do is kind of take the simple things. You know, we need to get people off medicine, you know, out of wearing a mask in your car with the windows up, get some fresh air, get out in the sunshine, not too much, because, you know, I had skin cancer. So, you know, there's too much of a good thing. But we need to sort of demystify health and get people in a place where they can, you know, not only be healthy, but be happy with their healthiness. And I think that's those two really have to go hand in hand. So that's why I see us going. Yeah. Got about 50 seconds left. So why don't you give your information for where people can find you, and we'll do it again next week.
Yeah, it's chancyterry.com. chancyterry.com. And I will be at Everman's in the morning at 9 a.m. teaching about the same stuff, but more. So if you want to see me on 9 Mile, if you want to meet me, but if you know anybody that loves to shop at 9 Mile, that's where you can find me.
Is this weekdays now? You're doing this?
It's on Wednesday. It's the third Wednesday. Every third Wednesday,
I do something at
9 Mile.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so
let us know.
I haven't put that on my website yet, but I need to.
Yeah, if you do a video of yourself doing that, you can post that on our side. We got to talk about a wellness page anyway, too. We need an Action Radio wellness page. I'll be talking about that as well. Yeah. If you ever need an extra hour, if you need more time to present a topic in more detail, let me know, because there's a lot of things we need to talk about.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. That's it for today. So bye, Gene, and I'll talk to you all in much better shape tomorrow. We're going to actually
drink
water.
Have a good day.
Oh, I can have a great day, Gene. Gene knows what day I'm having. If you don't know what day I'm having, listen to earlier in the show. It's all there. Oh, God. You think you're funny, too, Gene. I'll get you for that. All right. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And, of course, our new and improved website, writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And I'll be back tomorrow, 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. Oh, I'm getting this right. And let's do it again then.